brother. What's up?
This is a good recording, man.
Yeah,
I
brother, like,
dig it.
Solid. Right on.
There's too many of you crying. Brother, 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 there's far too many of you dying.
I think anyone who puckers up their lips and presses it against their boss's buttocks and then smooches is an ass kisser.
I don't like newspapers. I don't care for inexactitude and shallowness.
Listen, hotshot, I'm going to tell you something right now. I don't care for you or for the putrid sludge you're troweling out.
You know what you look like to me? You look like a rube. A well-scrubbed, hustling rube.
You're just absolutely right. And I'm absolutely wrong. It must be nice to always believe you know better. To always think you're the smartest person in the room.
The post, let's go.
Get your dadgum chili hot, right, boys? Get that chili hot.
This is your tanking responsibly leader, fan radio network, and KFAN. .com. 1 minute, 40 seconds past 3 Central Standard Time. We welcome you back to the Bumper to Bumper Show. It's a 3.5 hour tour on an exceedingly chilly Monday afternoon here in the Twin Cities of Minneapolis and St. Paul. My name is Dan Barrero, the occasional host of the program. Gardzi is the gravelly-voiced producer, and we are delighted you chose to join us to start a brand spanking new week. And you know what we're calling this week? Championship week.
Is it championship
week?
Well,
it's in Big Ten women's tournament.
That's true.
Is this week, is it not?
It is.
Gophers are, see if I have this right, we're playing Thursday or Friday,
Thursday night
against,
I think, your Hoosiers.
Indiana. We're a 7.
Yeah.
And Indiana's a 10. And I thought Indiana had started the season like it was going to be a dominant team, but obviously something changed. So, yeah, it's championship week. Then the Big Ten men's tournament will begin next week. Right now, Gophers in the number 8 slot, correct?
Yes.
I still am curious as to why we think they can't move down. If we lose the last two and other teams make a run, why can't we move down even more?
Well, we can move down a little bit. We're in no danger of having to play on Wednesday.
Okay, I see.
Like, Rutgers is hot on everybody's tail now.
Nobody wants to play Rutgers right now.
And
think about that.
The Gophers might. Round one.
Oh, that's...
I think it's 8-9 right now, Minnesota Rutgers.
Would that be the rubber game of the three?
It would be.
Didn't we split the regular season
series?
We did.
We did. Yes, sir.
That's exactly it. So we'll go a championship week for want of a better and more creative expression. We'll gladly steal it. We're delighted that, as I said, you did choose to join us here at least early in the program. We'll give you the Borton Volvo guest lineup presently. Lots of good stuff planned for this week. Really, the next several. Now that the dance is almost upon us, like I said. Final Four, the fan has learned, will be played in the Twin Cities. Well, actually, it won't be played in the Twin Cities. It'll be played in Minneapolis. Twin Cities will be the backdrop for, of course, the Final Four. And, a lot of things are... I think there's a lot of good, open, controversial questions and maybe even some good history to dig into regarding college basketball as well in the next several weeks. More details to come on some of our plans. I also mentioned that we are indeed your tanking responsibly leader. It's over for your Minnesota Timberwolves. Stick a fork in them. They're done. There's no equivocation necessary. There's no, well, you never know. We get Cubs one game closer to coming back. It's over. Forget about it. We are at 29-34, mired in the 9, 10, 11th spot in the Western Conference. We find ourselves now 5.5 games behind 8th place San Antonio Davy, 6 full games behind the number 7 seed, the Los Angeles Clippers of Anaheim. We just got off a 3-game losing or 3-game road trip in which it was a 3-game losing streak. We lost them all. We guarded irresponsibly yet again in Washington yesterday. I didn't watch a minute of it. In fact, I think I kind of forgot about it, and I'm glad I did because it obviously there wasn't much. Even Ryan Saunders, who's tried to take the high road, seemed, based on all post-game accounts, rather frustrated with the lack of defensive engagement. I think he said something to the effect of, well, you know, we had some really good ideas on how to guard him. Would have been nice to see us actually try to implement them. In effect, is what he said. That's as close as he's going to come to carving up the club, his own club. And
had lots of good ideas on lots of stuff. A lot of it hasn't worked out.
No. And we gave up, was it 135, 140? Doesn't really matter.
The Wizards are 26-37, and they don't have John Wall.
We shot like 52% from the floor.
It was explosive. I watched quite a bit of it. Yeah.
It didn't matter. We still got killed.
Yeah.
We still weren't even competitive. So it's over. And as such, is it time to tank? Well, I generally despise the whole tanking conversation because it's so trite and it becomes so cliched. But part of it is that if you're going to do it, and you might as well do it, because now we might as well talk about how high we can end up in the lottery. You have to tank responsibly. There's a responsible way to tank and an irresponsible, unprofessional way to tank. And Lord knows the Wolves know about the latter. They've done it at least once, going all the way back to the famous, infamous night. You and I were both there, Gartsy. I think it was the last time you'd been at Target Center. Almost.
Pretty close.
Yeah. The night when Mad Dog took, was it 7 3-pointers?
It was 6 or 7.
I don't know how many it was. It was too many.
That was it for me. I said, I'm never going back.
And you,
the season ticket holder that came up to you.
You've kept to that vow, apparently, or pretty close to it. That was with Dwayne Casey as the head coach, right?
I think so.
I think that was Case.
Yes.
How many years ago is that then? That's got to go back.
That was like 06,
okay.
I want to say.
That was
like
not
that.
Tanking responsibly. If you're going to do it right. And by right, I mean, don't have players who don't have players suddenly for the moment change roles and attempt to do things that they never did before. That's tanking irresponsibly, too obviously, and really unacceptably. Is that a word?
Yes, sure.
In any case, do it with, I guess, your head. Do it with, guess what? We're actually going to play Derrick Rose fewer minutes than we've been playing him before. We're going to play maybe even Andrew Wiggins fewer minutes than we have before, because he ain't light bulb ain't going off in his head this year the rest of the way. We got some kids. We had a couple of draft choices that have had some moments, including Okogie. We're going to play him more. We're going to play Jeff Teague less, if at all, which I don't think will necessarily devastate him. And we're going to play Tyus Jones more. We're going to give him a chance to run the team more often. There is no point, especially if you take a look at the schedule, which I just happen to have in front of me, in pretending that there is any real way to get in this thing. Now, I know it's confounding and frustrating given that the Lakers keep losing. They lost to Phoenix Saturday night. They're in utter and complete disarray. And you say, man, that's one of the teams that allegedly was, you know, going to make it impossible for us, and they're eliminating themselves as well. Why can't we get in on the fun? I just don't think, I mean, we're not serious about it. We're meandering again. The juice that one sometimes gets with a new coach being in place and having a different approach than the previous coach, which leads to this sort of adrenaline charge, we're past it. It's over. It just is. Now, again, we haven't had the full complement of players. I get that. But I just don't think it's going to matter, especially when you start looking at the schedule. March 12, we're at Denver. March 14, we're at Utah. March 17, we're at Houston.
It's frustrating.
March 19, we host Golden State.
It's a little frustrating.
Then what else we got on the schedule? Clippers, March 26.
Yeah, it's frustrating.
Golden State, March 29.
Obviously, it's, you know, it's frustrating.
Philly and Jimmy Butler, March 30. Well,
it's a little frustrating.
Butler might be sore. Portland, you get the point. There's a lot of really good opponents.
Starting next week.
So the point is, even if you, all right, you have your abacus out?
I can get it, yeah.
Get your abacus out.
Okay.
The Wolves' current record is 29-34. That means they have played 63 games to this point? 63 games.
Yes.
That means they have 19 games left.
19
correct?
Remaining.
Okay. So if you're at 29 wins, and the conventional wisdom is to really be serious about getting in the playoffs, you need to get to 44, and that might be low, but let's go with 44. Let's go with 44.
So you need to go 15-4.
You have to go 15-4 the rest of the way.
Good luck.
Yeah, I mean it's silly. It's and again, you don't have to proclaim it. No one expects Ryan Saunders to say we're quitting. That's not how you do it professionally. That's not how you do it responsibly. You do it subtly, and you do it by saying part of our goal the rest of this year is we're going to try to still win games, but by God, we're also going to try to get an even better look at some of the young guys maybe than we've had previously. You may not even have to proclaim that. You could just do it. You could just change the way you go about the business. But you might as well and see if maybe you can get lucky in the lotto. It's allegedly a deep draft. Is that right?
There's some players.
Maybe you get lucky. Maybe you could. Because somebody said to me, we're not that far out of the second worst record. Is that true? Let's take a look at the West. In the West, Phoenix is far and away got the worst record, right? They're 13-51. So
yeah.
We ain't catching them.
We're basically four games clear of the worst record. Second worst.
That's right.
Memphis is 25 and 40.
So who's to say? So maybe
now that's in the West.
Now remember, that's true.
In the East, there's a few, like Chicago's got 18,
yeah,
Cleveland's
right.
got 16, New York has 13.
Yeah, that's a good point. All right, well, we got a ways to go there.
So we can get like fifth or sixth worst.
Well, we might be able to get fifth or sixth, We'll see. I don't know. But let's stop belaboring it. Let's stop pretending. And let's not even bother with the phony recriminations after the game about how, I don't know. I mean, that's the thing that's being done constantly. It's this, you know, we don't know. I mean, how do you explain it? You explain it because you're not very good and you're not very committed defensively. And you haven't been committed defensively for a long time, whether you've had an offensive-minded coach as the head coach or a defensive-minded head coach. And so this notion that, how'd that happen? Can't explain it. Went to Washington and laid an egg. Who knew? Who could have seen that coming? No, we do this all the time. We've done this forever on the road. We've had, is it 4 3-game road trips where we've gone 0-for? Or is it 3 4-game road trips where we've gone 0-for? It doesn't matter. We're not very good. We got one guy who's playing at a high level, and we occasionally have one other guy who can do some stuff. But we're not very good, and we're not at full strength, and we got a lot of stuff to figure out. So I would say within the context of the roster you have, try to figure some of it out. Try to figure out who you'd like to, you know, I guess you could say go forward with, who you would like to commit to regarding the complimentary cast as well. But part of the reason I say stop the nonsense, start thinking about taking responsibility is I can't take any more post-game, sort of like I said, these quizzical questions of that just doesn't make sense that the Wolves didn't show up today, especially on the road against a team that has a worse record than we do. How do you explain it? You don't explain it because it happens over and over, which means the explanation is you're either not that good, combination of not that good, too hurt, too buried, too far behind, and too meaningless at this particular juncture. So, as I said, there's commercials all the time about drinking responsibly. Maybe we need to come up with a couple of commercials, a couple of bits about tanking responsibly. And that doesn't mean suddenly, who's a non-three-point shooter on our team now?
Andrew Wiggins. I would say you play Andrew.
It's a good line.
I was going to say, if you're going to take responsibly, you just play Wiggins 48 minutes.
That, and you have him take about 11 threes.
Let that thing work. Well, he's going to take long twos, and that's so it's the best of all worlds. He's not going to make them. They're inefficient, and they're going to lose, and you actually force him to play as opposed to benching him. That's tanking responsibly. Got a max player out there. We're not tanking.
Bumper to Bumper with Borrero on The Fan.
The Fan.
You know, when I got in the locker room, I had 25 texts from people that during the game, the Utah feed, you know, said that we were tanking games. It was embarrassing and that we didn't have guys hurt. Hey, that's totally irresponsible. You know, we're not taking games. You know, if that's so, then they got beat by a team that was tanking. And, you know, they should come down before the game. They should find out what's going on, who's hurt, who's not hurt. I mean, you know, Jerry, we're not taking. We're playing to win. Our guys go out there. And for our guys to go out, we won two games ago against New York. We lost in the fourth quarter against Charlotte. You know, we're not taking games. So it's irresponsible for them to go on TV and say that. If you're working at ESPN, you get fired for doing stuff like that. So that's irresponsible.
How far back does that go with Flip Saunders?
That is March 24th, maybe March 23rd, 2015. So the last year he was coaching here.
He sold it well.
He did,
He sold it very, very well. Yeah, tanking is the question. Of course, a couple people have... Well, we kind of went through this when... who was the performer who laid a curse on... Said he was threatened to lay a curse
Ja
on...
Ja Rule.
Ja Rule.
Yeah.
And as we said at the time, to Ja Rule... What's the distinction, sir, between the curse you are levying and all the others that this team has lived under from virtually the time it became a franchise? It's the same with tanking. You could say, what's the distinction in knowing when we're tanking and when we're not? There's something to be said about that. Morton Volvo guest lineup includes John Athletic Monday regular at 5:15. And at 3:55 or so, we expect a visit with Marnie Gellner, Fox Sports North, a friend of the Fan, and now doing lately, including today, I think, play-by-play work on the Fox Sports North Twins broadcast as well. So we'll catch up with her. We tentatively said 3:55. I think I probably should have to double-check with her because is the game over? I think it finally is.
Yes, yes.
It was a long game, I believe.
Yes.
We ended up getting killed. Didn't we have some bullpen issues late?
I think we had a lot of issues. I know Baltimore, did they score 9? I got my alert from the Athletic. You know, they're nice enough to alert us on every spring training movement down there in Fort Myers. But I don't know the final. I just know we lost.
That's what we do. That's what we do a lot of. By the way, I also want to, this is only Monday, and generally we don't talk to Lavelli Neal III on Mondays, more likely on Fridays, but I want to, on behalf of Twins fans everywhere, I want to thank Lavelle for taking the tension away, the pressure off, because I know a lot of you.
It's been
a very tough week on a number of fronts, but especially on this particular one. Lavelle has a piece. This is at StarTribune.com under the Twins beat. Here's your headline: setting things straight about any Twins interest in Craig Kimbrell or Dallas Keuchel. And again, according to Lavelle, the Twins are not interested in signing either one of them. And I part of the job, I think, of any beat man and any radio person is to, when possible, take the edge off. And there was so much doubt about this. There was so much question, open question, about whether this could happen. There were so many people who were utterly convinced that the Twins were on the precipice of signing at least one of them and maybe both of them. But for the record now, it can be established, according to Lavelle, we're not interested in Kimbrell or Dallas Keuchel. So you sleep well tonight.
That's it.
Taking now knowing that whatever, and it may be disappointing to you, because a lot of you, I'm sure, were damn well convinced that we were in it, that we were going to be a part of this thing, that we were going to go against the grain at a time when a lot of teams are finally figuring out what the Twins did a long time ago, that it's foolish to needlessly and endlessly spend money, that maybe we were going to go against our own philosophy, even though now everybody else in baseball has caught up with our philosophy. But as it turns out, we're on the straight and narrow. We're staying true to our philosophy. We're about building within. And then if we have to add later, we'll consider it. But there's no reason to think that we're going to panic here and do something as stupid as attempt to sign either or both of these players.
Well, I think,
and I'm glad he cleared the air.
Because now you can move forward.
Yes.
Like, there's been that domino, and you've just been waiting for it to fall. In your life, really.
Correct.
Are the Twins going to make one of these splashy moves? You've been holding out hope, and you've been waiting, and you've really put everything else off until you got that closure. And now you have that closure thanks to Lavel, so it is a nice public service. The award you're looking for, by the way, when you say add later, is supplement. They're going to supplement later. You supplement.
Supplement later. That's
it. Your core is your core, and it's so strong.
Buxton, Sano, and you know.
That's all within. So what do you need after? Supplements.
Supplements, compliments,
yeah,
the whole bit.
It's supplements. Well, you got to take supplements.
In any case, it's been. He clearly sensed it that you could kind of cut the tension with a Ginsu around here on that issue. And he said, basically, I haven't talked to him. I'm just thinking in his head. He's saying, I got to put this nonsense to rest. I got to clear the air so everybody can calm down a little bit and not be as tense as they clearly are wondering about any of these sorts of possibilities. So we clear the air on that as well, I certainly hope. Booth@KFAN.com is the Bradshaw and Bryant inbox. And you can reach us that way, or you can reach us via the phone lines as well. I don't think we have any giveaways today. But I'm not sure. Do we? You would tell me if we did.
I would tell you.
Well, sometimes you don't tell me. I'll be honest with you.
Most of the time I do. Or sometimes it's written down too far on the screen where you can't see it.
Right.
Because for some reason you can see like 52 lines on that screen, but sometimes I'll write on the 53rd line.
Well, that's a problem too.
Like that's what happened last week with the Wild ticket giveaway.
Been known to happen.
But we still got it. We still got it.
I got an email. When was this? This came in this morning at 6:21. You get emails at all times. You know, you never know. And this one caught my attention. Brad writes, "Dan, I lost my best friend this weekend. He was a good boy. My family will surely miss him. Just 6 months ago, at age 11, and even with bone cancer, he chased a black bear away from my wife, mother, and three-year-old daughter. True grit. That was the one and only time he ever showed any aggression towards another being. He loved flying off docks to fetch anything. He loved sailing and canoeing, hiking, riding in the car with the window down. He just loved being where the people were. I'm so glad my daughter was able to meet him and experience the companion that my wife and I had over the years. I hope Rainey finds my buddy Rambo and shows him where the best docks and stash of tennis balls are. I'm sure going to miss him. He was a good boy." Man, that'll get to you, won't it? Brad, the thoughts with you, man. Losing a pooch is tough. But I like the most important part about the email. And this is what I try to tell my daughter, and I think people, when you have to try to console other people who are lamenting the loss of a pet, of a pooch especially, I think the comeback, as hard as it is to believe at the moment where it's ending, is the most important. And that is, if you didn't have that time with him or her, think of all the memories you cheated yourself out of. And it certainly sounds like Brad got a lot of outstanding memories, he along with the rest of his family as well. So there it is. Rambo gone, but not forgotten.
This is Dan Barrero on The Fan.
Lineup again, John Athletic 5:15, Johnny Krasinski after the top five at 5, and coming up at the top of the 4 o'clock hour, a visit with Marnie Gellner from spring training. Twins had a day game, and she was broadcasting it along, I think, again with Dan Gladden, at least for most of it, on Fox Sports North. So we'll check in with Marnie. I'd actually reached out to her yesterday, and by the time she got back to me, I was done, and I'm too selfish to have passed along the opportunity for Guardsy to have Gellner on. I didn't even know if you would have or wanted to, but I, you know me, it's about me. So I said,
yeah,
well,
it's your show, it's your life. Yeah, yeah. I don't blame you.
Plus, I figured your voice by then was going to be off.
You thought I'd just pull the plug on the show and just leave it? No, we made it till one somehow yesterday.
This next story might be, if you want to reduce everything to the political, this might be one of the dumbest political moves in recent memory, and it involves, and it has a local angle, so to speak. The story broke, I think, over the weekend, it might have been yesterday, maybe Saturday, that in West Virginia, of all places, that it, at the state capitol, a poster was displayed. I don't know if it's still being displayed. In which, in the background, there is a still shot photo of the day the Twin Towers were burning during the terror attack on 9/11. With a headline over the top that reads, "Never forget, you said." And then in the foreground, there is a photo of Minnesota Representative Ilhan Omar with a headline under her that reads, "I am the proof you have forgotten." It got rightly torched, ripped, savaged almost from the beginning. It certainly should have been, as far as I'm concerned. But the irony of it is that if you have identified Ilhan Omar as a political enemy of whoever you think you are, how stupid do you have to be to pick a time once again where she's on the run within her own party for another series of comments that she had made? In other words, if you just shut up and let her do injury to herself from a public relations standpoint, she's going to do all the work for you. Instead, you go with this nonsense. You turn her into a martyr. You turn her into a more sympathetic character, and you change the subject from the latest in a fairly endless string of quotes that have been called into question about the representative. And the last one was, this was at a forum at a Washington, D.C. bookstore. "I want to talk about the political influence in this country that says it is okay to push for allegiance to a foreign country." And I've said this before. I don't know if it was on TV or radio, Guardsy, maybe both, Fox 9 or with us, that I would have more respect for her if she didn't apologize for the previous things she's kind of sort of apologized for. Because I don't believe what she says is an accident. I believe she means what she says, and she is extremely aware of the dog whistles, the expressions that she has thrown out there that are why a lot of folks have said, you are on extremely dangerous anti-Semitic territory. I mean, let's be clear about this. You should be able to criticize somebody on Israeli policy without being automatically accused of being an anti-Semite. You should be able to criticize Omar on what she says without automatically being accused of being Islamophobic. But you're asking to be called, not only accused, but you are being Islamophobic if you pair her with that poster. Game, set, match. You have handed the advantage to her. Now, as it turns out, it looks like the Democrats for a second time are going to come out with a statement or some kind of legislation repudiating what she had to say. I just don't buy that this is, well, she's, you know, she's not clear on this stuff, and so she's learning along the way. I don't buy it because it's happening too often, and the terms that she uses are too loaded. Ken Jacobson is listed, a quote from him in the Star Tribune story from a couple of days ago, Deputy National Director of the Anti-Defamation League, mentioning that since the founding of nation states, anti-Semites have questioned the loyalties of Jews in those nations. It's a classic anti-Semitic theory about Jews and one of the major ways to isolate the Jewish people. And that's how, to me, given her history, I don't know how it can be read. I wouldn't read it any other way. So I guess what I'm saying is, I think you can believe both things at once. I think you can believe that in West Virginia, they've made fools of themselves and undermine any credibility they might have on the issue of some of the things that, Representative Omar has said previously, and also believe that she's getting that almost all the heat that she's getting on, again, her endless series of commentaries on this are utterly earned. She is utterly, they're merited. She is absolutely earned the wrath that she has indeed received. So that's where we are with it. But again, if you want to be cynical about it and just get it, reduce it to the political level, don't you say, oh, just leave it alone. Let her, I mean, she every other day she's saying something that's being called into question. And it's understandably tricky. And there is, I think, in the part of some, this sort of reflexive, if you are criticizing Israeli policy or criticizing people who want to back it, you are automatically, you're almost in the point where, no, I am not. You're forced to prove you're not an anti-Semite. That's dangerous, too. I don't love it. But when you factor in some of the language she's used previously, hypnotizing the world, these are, I've said this, I think, somewhere before, radio or TV, that there are righty dog whistles and there are lefty dog whistles, and this is, in this case, because she's a lefty, is a dog whistle, as far as I'm concerned. And that generally means you are using certain language purposefully to make a point that, for me, goes beyond policy. And that's what I think makes it more dangerous to people and more concerning to people. And that's why I'd tell her to save the apologies. I wouldn't. The idea that we're going to believe her now, that she's seen the light or she's figuring it out, when she's already had to backpedal a couple of times?
Multiple times, yeah.
Come on. No, she's made a tactical decision. She wants to be the straw that stirs the drink. And she's perfectly willing to skirt and play with that line that previously others have felt is so dangerous, even if, as she's trying to make what could be classified as legitimate concerns or comment about ongoing issues, Israeli vis-a-vis Palestinian, where there is room for all of that. But I don't think it has to be an either or here for people, for me at least. It doesn't have to be. Well, if you rip one, you can't rip the other. In my view, they're both quite rippable, and they're both quite dangerous. And whatever heat the West Virginia GOP is getting on this, they deserve all of it. Have they removed the poster? Do we know, or is it still up?
I don't know.
I think it was a poster.
Yeah, it was. With her face underneath the towers on top.
Yeah, that's just you're asking not to be taken seriously on that particular issue. So I'll be curious to see how because the Dems, they're skirting the line too. This is a Democrat. This is one of the new wave of Democrats, of progressive Democrats, and I think the old time liberals, the older part of the party, is always running this fear that if we come down too hard, we're going to get swallowed up because maybe the revolution is beginning.
Yes.
That the ongoing issue in the Democratic Party, which is who's going to win long term, is it going to be the progressive wing or is it going to be the old-fashioned liberal wing? Because they're in very different places, as we've talked about, I don't know how many different times, on how many different issues as well. And so they're trying to kind of toe the line where they're trying to push back on her. And I think also not trying to overplay their hand where they end up getting pounded as well. So
they've had to spend a lot of time on her.
Yes.
I mean, in all honesty, the last couple of weeks.
Too much time on her. As I said, she
talking about resolutions and drafting things and having to respond to everything. It's a lot of oxygen that she's taken up
there. Well, and you can even argue about whether they should have to or whether they should. But her approach on this issue, her language, I don't think there's any accident in terms of the approach that she is to. I don't at all. And I think, as I said this last time we went through this, because it was already the second time she had said, okay, I'm learning on the fly, and I've got to figure out some things and still be true to the causes that are important to me. And I'm going, well, no, it doesn't. It's not that difficult to figure out. And if you have to be, if you have to have several of these epiphanies, then you're telling me that you're not really being very sincere. That it's more important for you to continue your line of thinking and your way of communicating that line of thinking than any of the other concerns that have come before you. That's what you've decided. So just own it. Don't even pretend that there's any sort of meaningful apology, because to me, if you're not a dupe, you're not going to believe it. If you're a dupe, go ahead and believe it. If you want to feel better about it or feel better about her, I just don't think there's any reason to believe that she is at all sincere on this particular issue. We'll take a pause here, and as I said, we should check in next 5 or 10 minutes with Marnie Gellner. She is in Florida, where all of us probably would like to be, given our ongoing weather issues. And we'll get caught up with her on her Twins broadcast, maybe talk a little Twins and a little Timberwolves as well. Stay tuned.
This is Dan Barrero on The Fan.
Breaking Big Ten news we got to get to a little bit later. Maybe top five at five, maybe sooner. Jim Delaney. Is his run as Big Ten commissioner is apparently close to coming to an end. That'll be very emotional for a lot of people. Gopher men's basketball back in action. Big one tomorrow night at the Barn. Garzy says he's going to file a live report and will storm the court if the Gophers beat the Purdue Boilermakers. Purdue, by the way, is free and clear now. They are a game up for the Big Ten lead. And so if they win out their last couple of games, they win the title. They can, I think, guarantee a share of the title by beating the Gophers. But point is, they want to keep winning and get that particular crown. More on that later. Marnie Gellner, kind enough to check in with us on the Whiting Clinic LASIK and Cataract Hotline. Dateline, Fort Myers, Florida, I think. Were you at home? Was it Fort Myers today that your favorite baseball team was playing?
Yes. Hammond Stadium, a home game for the Twins today against the Orioles. Dan, Fort Myers.
What was the temp?
Indeed. 82 today.
Oh, man.
Muggy game, partly cloudy.
Was it really muggy? Was it actually muggy?
Oh, it's thick. Yeah.
Really?
It's real thick. All you need to do is take one look at Dan Gladden's hair, and the curls be tight.
Yeah, that explains it. Well, that makes me feel a little better about the frigid conditions we're enduring, because I hate humidity. I think, and more than I hate, minus 30 wind chill. So I guess it's one extreme or the other.
Well, yeah. I mean, if you put it that way, you are so lucky you're not here, because it's thick.
It's already thick.
It feels pretty good.
So here's the peg for this. Was really the number one reason I wanted to have you. And I actually DM'd you yesterday, and you were probably already busy preparing for the Sunday game. And by the time you got back to me, I think we were off the air. And as I explained to Garzy, I'm way too selfish to say, hey, Garzy, if you want, maybe Marnie can call into you. I'm very possessive about that sort of thing. So I said, all right, well, let's try to work something out for today. It during the Friday broadcast, which got, of course, a lot of attention, maybe more attention than you even wanted it, knowing you a little bit, but regardless, the game's going, and I'm getting these tweets from people saying, well, the first one was, Gladden needs to shut up. He's not giving Marnie a chance to speak. And then it went from there to, man, sounds like there's some bad blood here between these two. Gladden's just being a real jackass. And in my mind, I said, well, look, I didn't hear it, but I have a hunch that a lot of this was just a sort of pithy give and take that Marnie prefers, actually, and with Gladden knows that she's going to get. So for the record, can you clear all that up? Because I know you got a lot of pushback, but a lot of reaction to it as well.
Well, the first I heard about it was maybe an hour or so after the game, and someone from WCCO radio called me for a comment on the controversy. And I said, I have no idea what you're talking about. Yeah. And he sort of relayed exactly what you said. And I was kind of left dumbfounded because I thought Danny Gladden treated me the same on that broadcast as he treats me every day of my life, which may lead me to reexamine our relationship. But he didn't change a bit, and he took some shots at me, but I like to point out I took some shots at him.
Yes, yes.
And it was just sort of a normal back and forth, and I was really shocked that anyone took it any other way. I felt like people wanted to come to my defense. Was that kind of what you were
Well, that's the second part I want to get to here, because again, I know you kind of well, I don't know you really well, but I think I'm fairly observant on these things. My gut tells me that you don't want, I think you've quoted, you describe yourself, I think, in the Royce column as thin-skinned, but we're all that in this business. But I still think you don't want to be patronized. That I because a lot of the emails I got or the tweets are almost like, we got to protect poor little Marnie. You know, she's, you got to be, you know, like you're going to fall apart. And to me, it all seemed, even if it was well-intentioned, it seemed very patronizing and something that would make your skin crawl because you're not looking for that kind of help, so to speak.
Well, I guess the only thing I would say to that is the people who were listening, were they maybe first-time listeners or maybe didn't listen regularly to Twins baseball?
Possibly, yeah.
That's how Dan treats Corey Provis. That's how he treats Dick Bramer. So I would only hope that he's...
Yeah.
That's how he treats his wife and daughters, yeah. I'm being told by
pretty much
first-hand sources. I'm going to hand the phone over just real quickly here.
Okay. Excellent.
Source. I have to be standing beside.
All right, perfect.
Glenn, so here's his take.
Oh, this is big.
How are we doing?
Danny!
Yes?
It's Barrero. How are you, man?
I'm doing real good. It's been a while.
It's been too long is how it's been, but it's not. That's not my fault. That's because you got all these weird contracts that don't let you go here or go there or whatever. If it was up to me, you'd be on with me every week. But that's another story.
Cross, I guess, radio channels, huh?
No, but it's okay for a minute or two. I mean, everybody Friday was getting mad at you via Twitter, and I said my guess was, because I didn't get to hear much of the broadcast, was that it's Gladden and Gellner getting after it the way the two of them, in terms of their personalities, do, and that there was no conspiracy here. Is that a fair representation, or were you trying to...
Yeah. Yeah. We don't... Marnie and I have known each other, and we have a neat relationship, I'd like to say.
Yes.
And don't forget, Marnie can dish it out as well as she can take it, and then sometimes I've seen her dish it out even better. So,
hey, by the way, I'm reminded, I have to remind you, you are on KFAN right now. Is that okay for a couple minutes?
Yeah, sure.
Okay, I just don't want you to get in trouble with anybody because this is sort of, you know, I know she handed the phone to you and, you know, we're fine with it. So, yeah, that's what I thought.
Put that up on the back end. We'll sign whatever we need to sign.
Yeah, you can always edit it later.
Yeah, okay? We can take care of that later on the podcast. We can eliminate you from even being on the podcast. That's not a problem. So go ahead.
I got to tell you, Dan, when this was presented to me early in the off season, I was looking forward to this more so than I would, even though I enjoyed Dick Bramer's broadcast.
Sure.
We have one more to do with Dick. I really, really enjoyed that. But I was looking forward to this. And just because of the relationship that Marnie and I have, and to be able to be down here at spring training. I didn't know that she had never been here before, been to the ballpark before. So she was like one of those rookies that were running around the field late in the game with like number 99. I put number 100 on the back of her jersey.
That's what I thought. That's what I figured that it was. And in fact, I would also argue again, spring training games, man, have especially, let's be honest, the activity isn't necessarily all that important. It can kind of be interesting, but if you can't have fun and open it up in that sort of avant-garde way in spring training games, when can you, right? I mean, just have some fun with it.
And I think that's what we tried to do. I think with the broadcast that, you said, that you're not looking for a lot of substance in the games, but you're looking for just, you know, some people working on certain things, but at the same time, we wanted to have fun up there, and I think we did. We accomplished that.
Do you remember what you would describe as your best dig during the you were on the broadcast today, too, right? You guys did it together today as well. Your best needle.
My
what
best
was your best needle?
Probably in between the innings.
Can you?
And that's when the banter got good, because don't forget, you got Kyle Hammer. You got an engineer in there.
Yeah.
We got other people kind of walking through. Yoan Santana was there. We had other guests on.
Sure.
So, you know, sometimes it can get kind of, you know, more of a job than anything.
But, sure, yeah.
In between innings was more fun.
Outstanding.
Have we successfully cleared the air?
I think so. Well, again, with me, I don't think there was anything to clear, because this is what I assumed.
For the rubes
out there, yeah, I think hopefully this, and maybe again, there was probably less pushback today because maybe people are kind of figuring it out now. They're going, oh, okay, well, that's kind of what they do. That's the banter. That's what they're comfortable with. Nobody's being cornered here, and it feels that they're in a very uncomfortable position.
Go ahead, Dan.
Just tell them to get used to it, because Marnie just signed a 3-year deal.
Outstanding.
No.
That's not true. Can that be confirmed?
No.
Is that breaking news, Marnie? Yeah.
Take that breaking news.
We'll reverse. There it is. That's our reverse breaking news sounder.
There
yeah.
You go.
There it is.
That's the end of the Dan Gladden portion of the interview, right?
Well, tell Gladden. You know my Gladden story, right? About my moment of truth with Dan Gladden.
No.
When I was, this is back in the Inkstain Wretch days. This goes all the way back to 87, actually. And Gladden and I didn't get along very well. Gladden, you know how he is. He's pithy and he's tough and he's, you know, and I'm this, you know, non-ball guy causing trouble, being snarky about the pitching, even in 87, which wasn't always, which wasn't always good. So the Twins are on the verge of clinching in Texas, and I'm on the trip because of that. And shortly, this was in the clubhouse, a visiting clubhouse. Before the players had even gone out on the field, we're down there hobnobbing, and Gladden beckons me over, and he says, "Hey, bro, come here." And I go, "Oh, I'm curious, but I'm going, okay, I'll walk over." And he goes, "Hey, listen, we got some a warm up jersey for you to put on, some baseball stuff to put on. We're gonna give you a glove, and you know, we're gonna get you out there, give you a chance to do a little BP fielding practice. I said, "Okay, funny, yeah, okay, I get it. No, I'm serious. No, Dan, I'm serious. That's what we're gonna do." And he kept going, and I kept trying to laugh it off. And finally, Gladden looks at me and says, "No, I'm bleeping serious, man. You seem to think you know so bleeping much about what we do and how we do our jobs. Why don't you get your ass out there and we'll see what we can do." So that was the low point. I didn't go out there, by the way. He was just trying to make a point. And then it was almost like the dam burst after that. And we kind of had this sort of meeting of the minds with a little help from a former beat guy at the time by the name of Mark Vansell, who kind of was the intermediary. He used to be the beat guy that year for the Strip, and a good friend of mine at that point. And then over a period of time, it evolved into, we had a pretty good working relationship to a very good one. We could talk off the record about stuff, and somehow, some way, that sort of opened the door. Gladden, you remember all that?
I don't remember me inviting you to come out and take some ground balls, but...
Well, sarcastically, you didn't mean it, obviously, but you were trying to make a point.
Yeah, my point was that you think you know everything about what it's like to play baseball,
yes,
right?
Yes, correct. That was basically it. Yeah, that was basically it. And, it was fun.
I don't remember it, but I'm sure I did that. I'll give you that.
Yeah.
How'd it go?
Well, I'm not that stupid. I mean, I would have gotten killed probably.
Yeah. He said it was too hot. We were in Texas. Remember, it was like 109.
It was too hot. It was hot and humid. And the ball probably would have bounced off my chin like 4 or 5 times on a wicked grounder from Gladden.
You mentioned Mark Vansell, and again, the athletes, and I'm not just saying baseball players,
yes,
the athletes have a tough time sometimes with certain writers,
yes,
correct?
Yes, correct.
It's across the board, whatever sport it is.
No doubt.
But for some reason, Mark Vansell was a guy that he was, like you said, he was a mediator for you and some of the other players.
He was, yes.
You know, and why was that? Okay. Don't know. He's moved on. He's gone to Chicago.
He just
Michael Jordan's book. And
that's correct. Vansell is out of the business. He's in publishing now. He's moved on to bigger and better things, including one of the Jordan coffee table books. I think he's just one of those guys that you say, there's guys who just know how to handle people better and just sort of reach them and communicate with them where they don't feel like they're being taken. And he was really, I still miss him. I haven't stayed in touch with him for the last several years. He was a terrific guy.
Dan, okay, and let me go the flip side to that.
Yes.
After Vansel, I believe, left, there was another beat writer that we had that used to try to socialize with the players, and he actually went to a game one time and laid out on top of the roof in, I want to say in Clearwater.
He did?
During the game on a lounge chair getting a suntan, and then came down and wanted to interview Tom Kelly after the game.
So, I don't remember that, but I'll take your word for it on it. That's pretty. Oh, so that didn't go over very well, you're saying?
No, because this guy, he was around for like three or four years.
Okay.
Still in the Twin Cities. I'm not sure what he's doing.
Mm. Well, yeah. It well, you know, it takes all kinds, man. You know, we're just like with players. Because, I mean, Danny, you've had your battles with players, too. You've had your battles with everybody. That's the beauty of it.
We're not going to go down there.
No, okay. We don't have to go down that road particularly.
No.
Well, listen.
Not really. Let's save that for another show.
We'll save it for another show. It's great to hear your voice. Great to...
I'm going to hand it back to Marnie.
I appreciate it. Yeah, just hand the phone back to Marnie, and we'll be in touch down the road. Thanks, man. It's good to, okay. good to talk with you.
You can call me anytime.
It's a deal. We'll take you up on that. Thanks, Dan. Dan Gladden. We didn't know that was going to break out, Marnie, in the middle of all this discussion, but...
Well, hey, whose interview is this?
Well, I was trying to be graceful about saying, hey, okay, pass the phone back to Marnie. I mean, that was the mistake you made when you ever gave up the phone.
Well, I thought it would be a comment, and here we go.
Nine minutes later.
You got to capitalize. You get Danny, and you turns a captive audience.
Yeah, it turns into an essay. All right, so how is, you know, it's interesting because you just did a Wolves game, right, not so long ago. Baseball is, I don't have to tell you, it's a very different art and a very different animal, especially spring training. So how do you prep, or do you just do it? I mean, how do you go about the business of prepping for what's has to be a very different broadcast than an NBA game?
I prepped for a good 2 weeks on any day, basically, that wasn't a Wolves game day. And I follow the Twins just as a Twins fan. So I know about big signings, and I know when we report to camp and do those kinds of things. And then I just sort of dug in and read all kinds of articles on all kinds of different outlets, and I would make notes and kind of had a 4 or 5 lines maybe of nuggets from every guy that I thought would be a potential influencer in spring training. And then you start reading about this prospect, this prospect, this prospect, and my notes got to be like 8 pages long.
Yeah.
But, you know, spring training, you just have so many guys that I just tried to do my best. And then the problem was, the most difficult thing for me was starting the 7th, 8th, and 9th innings and all the replacements and trying to keep up with it and realizing that if I didn't exactly know who was in center field at that exact moment for the opposition, that was okay. I just really wanted to know the pitcher and the catcher, and Danny just handed me a note. Beat writer Pomeranz. Does that mean something to you? Does that ring a bell? Beat writer Pomeranz.
Pomeranz? No, that doesn't ring a bell to me.
Okay.
You sure that wasn't you sure that wasn't in San Francisco? He was having some brawl with him in San Francisco. I don't know that. I don't remember that name.
I didn't brawl a Pomeranz, but I want to say there was a Pomeranz. There was a beat writer with the Twins. He's the guy I was referring to. Up on the roof sunbathing.
Are you thinking of Jeff Lenahan?
Jeff Lenahan. How long was he there?
Well, Lenny was there for a while. In fact, I just talked to Lenny about a month or so ago. He's doing, he sends his best. He's doing well. But he was there more than a year, I think. I don't remember the years, though. But maybe my memory's not very good because I don't remember a Pomeranz.
Okay. Well, if you know Lenahan, then ask him.
Okay, if he was sunbathing?
If he was sunbathing and came and tried to interview Tom Kelly after the game.
It's spring training, though. Everything's supposed to be loosey-goosey, isn't it, in spring training?
Yeah, but he was asking him a question about the ball game, and TK was saying, how do you know about the game? You were up on the roof in that chair tanning with your shirt and shorts on and stuff.
TK and Lenny did not, they were not meant for each other. I think that's fair to say. I think it's my recollection as I look back on it for sure. So,
well, he's gone.
Is he gone again?
He just walked out of the room.
This is as good an avant-garde interview as we've had in a long time.
You think you could go outside for a few minutes?
You might have to isolate yourself.
I'm on a back
porch.
Is there a lock on any of the doors?
What a piece of work. God, he still is a piece of work. It's amazing.
Yeah. Well, see, now you see how things went and why people got the wrong idea. That's Danny being Danny.
Yes, that's him. That's the, and I don't know. I mean, I would think in, when you're doing that kind of broadcast and you haven't done a bunch of them, and these are the first ones, I think I kind of like it, but maybe that's easier said than done when you're in the middle of it, because it can be, I guess, a little disorienting if you're not quite ready for one of his needles or one of the jibes, or then you just come back with something harder, which I'm told you did a couple times as well.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of how we played it. We were pretty buttoned up in the first three innings because that, you know, you're seeing your CJ Cron and your Jonathan Scope and your Marwin Gonzalez, and you want to give them the due time and really give Twins viewers and listeners a chance to see these guys. I mean, I took it very seriously. Then as we got into the late innings, there's just more time for that banter because, you know, 98 with no name on the back. I mean, I get his name because they give us a roster of the guys coming over from the minor leagues that have the 98 with no name on the back. So we would give him a name.
Sure.
But we didn't have, you know, notes of research, and he got a long at bat, or we got a long half inning. That's when the banter started and the stories. And he took his shots at me, and I came back with the stories of him shoving chicken wings under my hotel door in the middle of the night one time and sticking me with an $80 room service bill and putting notes on me while I slept on the plane. And
yeah, I love it.
Yeah,
which is, you got it. That's ultimately the only way. I mean, that's the only way you survive with him. I mean, and that, as you said, that's what he does. I don't think he's a chauvinist. I think he's an equal opportunity needler. That's kind of what he does, right? I mean, that's kind of him.
That is 100% true, and I told him as much after the final broadcast today.
Mm-hmm.
I gave Kyle Hammer a big hug, told him thank you, and I gave Danny a big hug, and I told him thank you for not treating me any differently than you treat Corey or Dick, or frankly, that he treats me when I'm the field reporter, or just the gal walking by. He treated me exactly the same, which is exactly what I wanted.
It's all you're looking for. It's exactly it. Well, the other thing on doing a baseball game, though, is, you know, the information is one thing. The background is one thing. It's impossible, as you say, to keep up with, at this, especially early juncture of spring training, of everybody's number and everybody making the switches. But there's that issue of, all right, how much silence is okay in baseball? Because generally in a basketball game, you're filling it up pretty good. But baseball is, it's, you, I don't know. I mean, did you feel like, is that an art to figuring out, okay, when do I just let the moment breathe or the atmosphere noise in the background just take over? And when do I feel like I've got to talk to fill the time?
Mm-hmm. That was absolutely something that I was trying to balance. And the games, all three of them were simulcast on radio and TV.
That's true.
So I'm trying to be conscious of constantly saying the count, the inning, the score, who's on base, and then also thinking, well, people are watching on TV going, I know, you just told us it's 6-4 two batters ago. The score didn't change.
Right.
You know, and I basically, before I even went in, said, you're going to piss off some people. The radio viewers, or the radio listeners are going to say it's too much, and the TV viewers, or vice versa, not enough, whatever. I just had to say I'm not going to worry about that because you can't please both audiences because they are so different. And we tried to make it clear that it was for both. So I just kind of tried to walk that line and hope that I didn't leave anything out. And, yeah, I mean, people would tell me, let it breathe, let it breathe. And so I tried to pick my spots. Then I had finally, at my third game, I had a home run to call, and I kind of had a home run call in my back pocket. And I pulled that out, and I thought, well, now I've built this thing up, and now they can't possibly live up to any expectations. I was hoping I'd get a home run call out of the shoot, and that just, I don't know, it all. We did it, though. You know what? We got through three games and no SBC violations.
That you're aware of, at least.
On the air, off the air.
At this point, yeah, that's all that matters. That's the main thing. By the way, a couple people are reminding us of Mike Pomeranz, who was Care 11, but that's not who he was talking about.
Yeah,
I don't
think. He wasn't around in the TK times.
Yeah, he wasn't around in the TK times anyway. That's true.
He wasn't around TK
times. Is he the guy who's in San Diego now?
Yes.
Yeah, okay, that's what I thought. Yeah, Care 11 guy then. And
he does seem like a guy who would spend a game tanning.
Yeah, that's possible.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it's possible.
As Marnie would know.
Yeah.
But I don't think he was around for the Tom Kelly era.
Well, you know, there's this etiquette about, as you probably know well, Marnie, at baseball stadiums and ballparks, especially in spring training, about what you are allowed to wear. The first spring training I went, and this was when the Twins were still in Orlando, I think, at this point. And I either didn't know about those rules or didn't care. And so I came out the first day, in a pair of not just shorts, but like these sort of, I don't know how to describe it, avant-garde design shorts. They weren't like a solid color. And I'm walking towards the batting cage, and Royce looks at me. Not even a manager or a player looks at me and goes, "You got a lot of nerve wearing those shorts, boy." Just like that, half kidding, wow. Half serious.
Wow.
And I'm looking that around like, am I going to be arrested? Yeah, I mean, it was bizarre. So there's a lot. There's too many rules in baseball, frankly, but that's sort of the way it works, I guess, in that
game. Well, you know what? The Rocco Baldelli spring training might have allowed those shorts, because that's one of the things that he implemented, was the players are allowed to wear basically what they wanted. I mean, it has to be Twins gear, but sure. If you want to wear long sleeve shirt, your navy blue shorts, your red top,
yes,
whichever shorts, that's how guys were. It was difficult on my end to identify people, especially the new guys and some of the minor league guys, because they weren't uniform and with numbers and easily identifiable. Yeah. And coaches were wearing the same things that some of the players were, that some of the equipment guys,
sure,
and trainers and stuff. But I was wearing summer appropriate,
Hello?
Shirt and,
yeah.
And Danny told me I was too dressed up. So.
Naturally. Yeah, well, it wouldn't have mattered. Whatever you wore, he'd have found some fault with it.
Well, yeah.
Right? I mean, that was just...
Today I wore a green shirt, and at the end of the broadcast, we signed off. He said, "By the way, I hate green shirts."
Thank
and
you.
And he was dead serious, and I have no idea why or what, but...
Yeah, just something against green shirts. Yeah, that tends to be him. So is this the end of the play by play stuff? What do you do from this point forward?
This is it. I have a flight tonight. I have a Timberwolves home game tomorrow. I think we have the OKC Thunder.
Right.
Start of a back to back. We had a Detroit after the game.
Nice.
So jumping right back to Wolves tomorrow.
No rest for the weary is what you're saying.
Pretty much.
Yeah, but you're used to that. That's all right. You'd rather have it this way. I mean,
I'd rather be busy than bored.
And you feel pretty good about it overall? Was it fun?
It was a blast. It was incredibly memorable. I will absolutely never forget it. I have no desire. I can confirm. I thought this going in, and I can absolutely confirm. I have no desire to be a baseball play-by-play announcer for a 162-game season. I have no idea how these guys and hopefully gals do it, but the level of sort of focus and concentration and being all in for 3 hours, and in the regular season, 3+,
yeah,
and rain delays, yeah, and day after day after day, holy man, it is exhausting mentally. I was good 3 games in 4 days, and I towards the end of this one, I was like, whew, I'm getting tired.
Well, except for the breaking news Gladden went with. I mean, something's up, obviously. I mean...
Yeah, I have no idea where he pulled that. I honestly, Dan, I don't know where this came from on the Twins end and FSN. I just know they had a conversation. They came to me, and I want to say like November or early December, a long time ago, and said, "Twins just want to kind of change the pace at spring training. They have this 3-game window that fits with your window. You want to do play-by-play?" And I was like, yes!
Great. Yeah, I mean, why not? Yeah, it's fun for everybody. Well,
awesome. I've never been here. I've never been to Twin Spring Training because I've always been on Timberwolves, but it is an absolutely gorgeous stadium. It's like
it is nice.
To another world in the middle of winter. So I
well,
love
I haven't
it.
Seen, I mean, it was nice when I went, but I mean, they've made some more improvements. I mean, the place is if you, I've never, because I'm not much of a ball guy. I'm more of a basketball and football guy. I've never quite gotten into the whole spring training is the greatest thing ever climate. I don't know why. It's fine, but it's not religious for me. But as a building and as a place for fans to go to, obviously it's great. It seems very user friendly, yeah, and everybody seems kind of happy.
Beautiful,
there.
And I think it's a little therapeutic. It's pretty good for the soul to see green grass and just hear the sounds of crack of the bat and just baseball sounds and sounds of summer. I had my family here, so it was an amazing trip. It was fantastic.
I'm a little worried about your Wolves club now, because they just finished up the road trip losing in Washington, and we're getting very close to the point of no return here, because the schedule's about to get tougher, and maybe Covington's close, but man, there's not much margin for error. We were trying to do the math, And I think basically to win 44, what do we say, Garzy, your club
15
would
and four.
Have to go 15-4. So it's going to take, at this point, quite a miracle to get back on this thing. Because I think they thought, then they looked at the schedule, we got some winnable road games. And these were the ones, I think, some of them at least, the one in Atlanta and the one in Washington. And mm-hmm. it's just not working out very well for your club right now.
No, and I followed those three games pretty closely. We would find a sports bar or something like that here in Fort Myers that had the NBA package so we could keep up on the Wolves. But, yeah, those were three disappointing losses, and it's just kind of deflating because you think we're scratching there, we're knocking at the door,
right.
We've got a chance, you're doing the math, and now you just try to regroup and, I don't know, win a couple at home and hope a couple teams fall and that you at least have the – that we're two games out and we're, you mm-hmm. know, just something to look forward to. But you're right, that losing those three on the road was a pretty big blow.
It would be, it'd be nice to get into any kind of a regular rhythm where at least you could say, okay, we know the playoffs are a given, and then it's just a matter of whether you can do anything with them, right? I mean, I know you'd love that, and all of us who are basketball fans are clamoring for it, and unfortunately, after last year, you know, things, I mean, I'm not even sure, Marty, because you've been around this for a while now. I mean, that you could even, if you were scripting it, that people would buy the script going the way it has, you know, whether it's the Butler deal and that falling through and just sort of a number of things that have happened since. It's just, it sort of blows your mind a little bit, doesn't it?
Oh, wow. I mean, what an eventful season. Somebody could write a book someday about this season. Alone. Yeah. I guess I'm really looking forward to Covington coming back.
Yes.
I think he's got to be on the doorstep. He was already in the G League. And so at least you have that on the horizon. And just, I mean, I don't even know how do we evaluate Ryan Saunders. He has not had his full team. Covington was hurt on New Year's Eve in New Orleans and he has not played. So it's that December 31st.
Yep.
Almost, well, more than 2 months. So I mean, there are a lot of questions still left to be answered, so maybe you need the final few weeks of this season to just sort of try to put an answer to some of the big questions you have for this team.
It's a great point, and so literally, Ryan has not coached a game in which Covington was available to him. So,
right.
And I'm sure if you're Taylor, and maybe Taylor's already made up his mind, I don't know, but that's part of probably what he's waiting for is, okay, let's get as close to healthy as we can with as close to a full contingent. Let's see. Let's just, even if it's not a playoff push, let's see if I can get the vision of, you know, kind of where this might be headed. And you're right. Covington, I think, is very close now. Whether it's tomorrow night or not, I don't know if that's been established, but that's obviously the next question. Safe travel. What are you flying back? Did you say tonight or tomorrow?
Yep, flight tonight.
Excellent.
I'll be at the Timberwolves shoot around tomorrow morning.
Well, I think for you, the good news for you is I think we're above zero tomorrow. And then I think we're supposed to hit 30s by the weekend, although Saturday and Sunday there's another snowami coming through. So be prepared. It's warmer, but more snow. So that we'll have that to look forward to. There you go.
We ain't turned the corner yet. We're close, though, Dan. We're close.
It's great, very good to catch up with you. I'm glad you enjoyed the experience. I'm sorry Gladden, sort of took over in the middle of it, but I think we got everything covered. I feel pretty good about it.
It was a thorough interview. It took a lot of twists and turns, hijacked, but we came back around. And it's good to talk to you. It's been a while.
It has.
And text me anytime.
We'll do it again. We'll do it. Yeah, we won't wait so long. I appreciate it again. Safe travels back, Marty. Thanks.
All right. Appreciate it. Thank you, guys.
Absolutely. Take care. Marty Gellner and a bonus appearance. Totally unexpected. From Dan Gladden in the middle of it.
Couple of times.
God, I just love it.
Couple of times.
It's so classic Gladden. Let's get caught up, digest a couple of things that we discussed in that interview. John Athletic's got a very, very difficult, I think, what do they say, act to follow in the business? Very tough. I don't even think he's up to it.
Bumper to Bumper with Barrero on The Fan.
Head out to the Sportsman's Guide in St. Paul on Saturday from 10 to noon. You can catch a live Beyond the Pond broadcast. Kevin Faulness, Pat Micheletti, Lou Nanny, all going to be there. Plus, register to win a pair of suite level tickets to the NCHC Frozen Face-Off at XL Energy Center March 23rd and 24th. KFAN.com, keyword events.
By the way, for the record, Jim Delaney is scheduled to step down as Big Ten commissioner, but not until 2020. So that's a ways off, I guess. I don't know if there's an actual date that has already been established. We, as always at a time like this, go to Bodog for odds. Early odds of who might replace him.
Yeah, a lot of good names.
And, well, one interesting long shot, he's not in the top three. He's listed at still a respectable 75-1, is Mother Maturi. Joel Maturi is listed at 75-1. Norwood Teague is 250-1, which I'm still surprised. I thought it'd be even more prohibitive than that.
Might be a good value bet.
It could be.
He's making a little bit of a comeback.
I'm sure he is.
Doing some things in Charlotte.
Is he?
Yeah, he's making a little bit of a comeback. He's getting out there again a little bit.
All right, if you say so. Boothatcafn.com is the Bradshaw and Bryant inbox. I'm glad to, I guess, get it confirmed that it was what we kind of suspected on Friday regarding the alleged tension in the broadcast. Is that, and here's the thing. Anybody who spent any much time around Gladden knows that that's his nature. Anybody who spent any amount of time around Marnie Gellner is she likes to fire back on stuff like that. But in her sideline reporting role, there's not much of an opportunity to see that side of her. Wouldn't you agree? I mean, maybe occasionally, but rarely.
Yeah, that's fair.
I think it's more likely it's going to be in a longer form, such as you're broadcasting a game. So I think part of the misconception about what was going on between them was based on not knowing that when she's firing back, she's not just firing back because she's pissed. She's firing back because that's the game. That's the game that she likes. That's the game that Gladden almost demands. If you're going to, if you're going to survive with Dan Gladden, it almost needs to go that way. And as I said, he went from being, hated. Or hated me to a place where over a period of time, maybe just because he's, familiarity in this case was breeding the opposite of contempt. It gets used to you a little bit. And then you have a couple of meetings of the minds where you agree to disagree on some stuff. And then he ended up being an extremely reliable, helpful source on a lot of stuff, on a lot of good, juicy stuff over the years as well. So maybe we'll try to catch up with him during the season. Did he not say,
call me anytime?
Call me anytime.
He did.
He did say that, didn't he?
He did. I'll pull the audio.
Just got to be sure that we remember that. So, and we didn't even get to, it's too early for me in spring training to get into what happened in the game and, the late problems for the Twins bullpen. Does that mean anything? It's just, I hate doing it because it's so damned early. So it was more fun talking about doing that kind of game, that kind of broadcast, and comparing and contrasting it with basketball, and then Gladden getting in the middle of it was kind of fun as well. Anything else strike you about our conversation?
Well, my favorite part of the whole broadcast was when I was telling Abbott this on Friday. Like Marnie said, you can't see the numbers. Like a lot of the minor leaguers, they only have numbers on the back and like not even on the front. So if you're not paying attention when they come up, you have no idea who they are. And so she was talking about that, and Dan was like, well, you got to look. He's like, you got to look in the on-deck circle. That's where you got to look. They're taking their swing. She's like, Dan, I still can't see that because they're not looking at me. So they were going through that, and she goes, who are these guys? And he basically said, they're the minor leaguers, and after the game, they're going to have to walk back to the minor league camp. And Marnie was like beside herself. She said, they actually have to walk all the way back there? Like, there's no bus? They don't give them a golf cart? Like, you just got to walk? That's kind of depressing. So that's the kind of broadcast that's fun.
Well, and
when
again,
it just becomes kind of a talk show almost.
It's almost slapstick, yeah. And
a podcast.
In part because you can pretend it's life and death in a spring training game in mid-March. Not even mid-March. What's the date? Less than mid-March.
March 4th.
It's early March, for God's sake. But then you're a pretending, right? I mean, the age-old issue of people who don't understand you're doing a simulcast, you can't worry about that at all, right? You just sort of have to let that go because That's how people are. They're on the one track of wherever they are watching or listening to the game. So if they're watching it, they may not even know or care that it's being simulcast. And to that extent, what is the number one pet peeve that most of us have on radio broadcasts? It's the score of a game, right? Now, again, you could say spring training. That's not as important as regular season. Certainly not as, well, spring training really in most regular seasons, once we get to August, pretty similar, right? I mean, there's really no meaning for either, is there?
Not lately.
I wouldn't think, would you?
Not lately.
Yeah.
No, sadly.
By the way, I got a leftover combine question for you. Although, well, let's get to that, and then we'll do a shorty this segment, try to get caught up. So do most people buy the notion? Here's what is weird to me about the way things get going in Pitchfork Nation. And in this case, the Pitchfork part isn't necessarily negativity. It can just be mob mentality. So now that Kyler Murray reached this certain height threshold that's considered a minimum, that is not going to be a red flag, apparently, for a lot of teams, the feeling I get is he's the only quarterback you could consider at the top of the draft. He is the best player on the board. And maybe I haven't broken down the tape of him, so maybe he should be. But I'm going to continue to be stubborn about the Ohio State kid. What's his name?
Dwayne Haskins.
Who can't... Well, is it he can't move as well, or that...
That's just not really his
game.
That's
just not his game.
Yeah, I mean, he's not a great runner.
Can he... is he the kind of guy who can buy time?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because I just love his arm. And when I say his arm, I don't mean the cannon part. His accuracy. Every game I saw, it seemed to me, he was throwing the ball in very tight windows, effortlessly, fearlessly, finding people, etc. And is the story true that your guy, who is the ESPN guy, who's on, he's got a talk show, does it start at noon on ESPN Radio?
Are you talking about Stephen A. Smith?
Stephen A. Smith. Did he get caught again where I thought there was a headline I saw where he dismissed, what's the name of Ohio State guy?
Dwayne Haskins.
Dwayne Haskins. Because he runs too much.
He's more of a runner.
He's
is
more
what
of
he
a
said.
Runner.
He has like
he
30
never
career.
Runs.
He has like 30 career rushing yards. He has a bad moment.
So how do you do that?
I don't know.
How do? In all seriousness, how do you go
I
with that?
Know.
And if you're, it's. I'm thinking about a lot of people who, if they say that publicly, they're going with, "Are you making some assumptions about a guy because he's black? That he has to be a runner? Because that would be the accusation if a number of other people said that." You can't know everybody. Like I told you, I can't even remember his name. I can remember the way Haskins plays, though. And so, Murray's becoming fashionable, and maybe he's going to be great, too. I'm not ruling any of that out, but man, oh, man, Haskins to me, and I like Haskins' size. He's pretty big. See, I know the game has changed, and now we're less afraid of little guys, and maybe because the game has changed, and that might be a good thing, but... I'll tell you what, man, I kind of like this kid, too. I'd be interested in him. Should we get caught up?
Oh, yeah.
Are we a little behind?
We're a little behind.
All right, we'll do it. We'll get caught up. We got top five at five to get to. A huge Big Ten men's basketball game for the Gophers tomorrow. That'll be part, I'm sure, of the top five at five. Who knows what else? And John Athletic on, like I said, effectively the end of the Timberwolves regular season. And maybe some Vikings conversation, and who knows what else.
This is Dan Barrero on The Fan.
Enter to win a party at the Crooked Pint in Minneapolis to watch all the college hoops action this month. It's KFAN.com, keyword contest.
Talk about life and talk about love. It gets to the point where the words ain't enough.
Top five at five right around the corner. We'll check in with John Krasinski as well. And I'm sure we'll talk a little Wolves with him. Maybe some leftover Vikings material to get to. Maybe some college basketball as well. I mean, it is interesting. Ever since he savaged the hockey community, the Wild have been on a pretty good roll. That said, maybe you can help me with this, because maybe the problem is me, okay? I'm willing to acknowledge that possibility, but I don't think it is. I think, in fact, I worry that now I'm starting to get worn down by those out there who try so hard to cling to what I would call artificial victories that I need to just sort of hold my ground. I don't know if you saw it. I know I heard Common talk about this, the headline in the Strib about the Wild's shootout loss 3-2 to the Preds yesterday. Why does it have to be presented as, yes, a moral victory? Why do we feel it? That's very different from saying that the team should get destroyed for what? Blowing a late lead in regulation and then ultimately
losing in the shootout.
Losing in the shootout. So instead of, so you get a point, but you don't get the two, right?
Yes.
I don't think anybody has to savage them. But again, you read this stuff and you read these headlines and you go, what planet do we live on here that we feel this obligation to citify the news, for want of a less ham-handed expression, as in the Sid Hartman of, I can't even say it. Citify a story would mean we got to look at the bright side of it, whether there really is all that much of a bright side. The irony, too, on the whole issue of back-to-backs, we just went through this the other day with the Wolves, is that a lot of times reporters don't even wait for the players to invoke the excuse before they hand it to them. They may not even want it. They may not even be asking for it. Are you going to tell me that the reason the Wild lost late in regulation, well, the score, the game was extended, was because they were so tuckered from playing the day before? At that moment, it caught up with them, or is it just the other team scored, or there was a? It just, I don't know why do we have to do it over and over and over? And I get the benefit of the doubt is a little more on our side because we are on a roll, and you can't win them all. That's true, but I'd like us to adhere to a little higher standard than that, but we can't apparently. What? Other than because we know that if we held to a real high standard, we'd have no chance to enjoy everything. So we invent these other substandards, I guess, to make us feel vital and to make us feel like we're part of the action.
What I will say is it seemed like the players were annoyed they gave up the goal. Like, if you read the quotes from the players.
Zucker, good to get 1 point, but we wish we definitely could have gotten two, right?
Yeah, and there was another one that said basically the same thing in that story, if you're reading the Strib story. Where it was basically like, yeah, I mean, you got to win games like that is what they said.
You want to win those, you want to close those out.
I would say part of the reason why everybody was so quick and Wild doesn't lay down was the headline, which is hysterical.
That's the one. Yeah. So yeah. Are you literally telling us that a team is supposed to, I mean, man, what courage to actually continue to play the rather than forfeit the game? We're going to continue to play it, and we're not going to lay down. What is that from? It's like I said, it's citifying the news, the sports news.
I think the head coach in this case did a good job of getting everybody prepared for that, because late Saturday, he did a very good job in the news conference, and I watched pretty much, I guess I watched all of it on
you
Fox Sports North.
Sure.
Well, the game was fun against Calgary,
right?
And then I stayed up. I'm like, well, I'm already up. I might as well hear what the head coach has to say. And he did a good job setting the whole thing up, basically saying, I don't know if Dubé will play. I mean, goalies don't play doubleheaders, and we've never played two games in one day before. And so I think he got everybody's appetite rolling on that.
Yeah.
The players, not as much. And last night they played really well. It was a good game. But I'll also say they're kind of obligated to always play at this point if they want to make the playoffs because of what has come before. There was plenty of lying down in months September to, where are we, March? A lot of lying down before that.
And you know what? A lot of that lying down was happening on day one of a back-to-back. Or on a game in which there was no back, there was no game the night before, there was no game the next day. So stop. It's such a lazy assumption that, as I said, a lot of times players aren't even interested in. And as you say, you made your own bed, man. You know, there was plenty of time to avoid. If you want to buy that notion, there was plenty of time to give yourself greater margin for error. Now you're in the thick of it. You're in it. We're in the playoffs as of right now, but you got a couple other teams that are right with you. So there's no rest for the wicked. I mean, you can't talk yourself into. I tell you what, the league has thought about it, and we're going to go ahead and give you the second point. Because we feel bad, because you played the night before and you won, and
it was
tough,
our fault.
It's a tough thing, so we're gonna, you know, and it's a hard way to lose because of the way you had the lead until late in regulation. So I tell you, we're just gonna give you the second point. It's not gonna work that way. Stop feeling sorry for yourselves, everybody. We all feel sorry for ourselves in this town, and then we wonder why left with the commitment to competence, where that's the best we can hope for. Let's just try to be competent. Anyway, you were saying top five.
Big Ten news with the commissioner, Jim Delaney. NDSU goes to the White House. Twins have named an opening day starter, and the Wild refuse to lie down.
Bumper to Bumper with Barrero on the Fan. Just in case you missed it, it's the top five sports talkers of the day. Now, it's time for Dan Barrero's Top 5 at 5, driven by Borton Volvo.
That's snowing again. Is this even in the forecast?
It's snowing?
Yeah, it's a very light, driving windstorm right now.
You sure it's not just blowing snow from the ramps?
No, this is snowing. It's cloudy again, and they're supposed to get another snow-nami on Saturday.
It does say scattered flurries basically now, a little bit overnight and all of that.
We didn't need them. Is that included in the top five? Pau Gasol?
No, that's not included in the top five. Wasn't that like 3 days ago?
Well, yeah, but I mean, why didn't we want them? Ends up with the Bucks.
We don't have any room in the front court. Are you kidding me?
Yeah, you're probably right about that. You think the Bucks might have been more? It's either the Bucks or Toronto. Where did he go? I want to say it was Milwaukee.
Yeah, they bought it.
Would that be more attractive, you think, than coming to this team right now?
At the moment,
probably true.
Yeah, at
probably
the moment,
probably true. Anyway,
I mean, Milwaukee, Minnesota are frequently, and Minneapolis are frequently compared.
That's true.
You know me; I'm a huge Milwaukee guy.
How could you not be?
I love Milwaukee.
Yeah, I don't know why, but you do.
What do you mean?
It's okay.
It's a nice city.
This is a better city than Milwaukee.
Well, yes. I like living here better, but Milwaukee's not a bad option.
It isn't?
No, I like Milwaukee. Right. Milwaukee's solid.
Why don't you move there, then? We like it here.
I like it here, too. Right. I don't really know. I buried the lead in the top five, by the way. Speaking of we like it here, I'm going to get to it in a second. Right. But I don't really know what I would do in Milwaukee, given that I don't really like much to do with Wisconsin sports.
Well, we have a lot of stations there. It still may be a good job for you. Yeah.
Yeah.
Don't we?
We do. Yeah. We've got a lot of them.
I'm sure Tyler could help you out there if you want to
grease the wheels.
He could grease the wheels
on. Maybe I could host the Greg Gard show, talk about Brad Davison every week.
Something to it.
That'd be great.
Yeah.
The next mayor of Maple Grove. You ready to roll?
Yeah.
Yeah. It looked like we kind of got our legs after the first, I don't know, however many minutes. I thought Foligno and Fair and Brown had a few shifts that kind of got us going. I thought they played really well, so it was good to see that. And, you know, it was good to get 1 point, but wish we definitely could have got two.
Yeah, that's Jason Zucker talking about the Minnesota Wild last night at the XL Energy Center after a nice victory on Saturday night on Jerome McGinley night at the Saddle Dome in Calgary, where they won that ball game. Fun game, entertaining game. It was good. They flew home, played Nashville, looking to get a couple of points. They ended up getting one. Should have gotten two, could have gotten two. We're up 2-1 late in the third.
Could have laid down, too.
But they could have just not shown up.
That's it.
They could have just, when they landed in St. Paul at 4 in the morning, said...
A lot of teams might have.
Not going to work.
Yeah.
When they got an MSP, Bruce could have called the league and said, tell Granny to go back to Nashville. We'll take him on Tuesday.
Is the implication that also we could have laid down after regulation and lost the game in OT?
I don't think that's the implication.
Oh, okay. All right. It's just having to do with...
The overtime was interesting in that... You know, a lot of times when the overtime, it gets kind of pear-shaped because it's 3-on-3, mm-hmm. and like one chance turns into another chance, and it turns into another chance. There wasn't a ton of that. It was all just kind of like measured.
Okay.
It was almost like each team was trying just to get to the shootout.
Felt like 4-on-4, even though it was 3-on-3.
I don't know what it felt like, but it wasn't the up and forth, back and down. It was good. It was entertaining. There were some good chances.
Apparently, it was a big Lou Nanny night last night, too. Huh? Let's play hockey again last night.
Yeah. It's his week. I mean, this is Lou Nanny week. Yeah. This is state tournament week. So we're going to have him on like 9 times this week, including tomorrow, 5 o'clock or 5:15, and then he's going to be at the X all weekend because it's a state hockey tournament. So it makes sense that he would do Let's Play Hockey tonight. So the Wild, or last night.
How many times has he done it?
Let's Play Hockey?
Yeah.
I don't know. I have to imagine a couple.
Have we been invited yet?
No.
No.
I was invited. I couldn't do it. A game I went to in December, I was invited to be part of the R-Ice, where you dump the ice into the Zamboni.
Were you really?
Yeah, Sickman invited me. It was very nice of him. I couldn't do it, though, because I wasn't going to get to the game in time. Like, I had to be there at, like, 6:30.
Yeah.
And we were going to be, like, flying in hot, like, right around puck drop.
Right, a little tight.
So, I wanted to do the R-Ice.
Yeah.
And I'm still mad. And by the way, remind me, we got to play Kanapali Beach Hotel song at some point. I'm still mad that I didn't fill up from Maui. I was going to fill up one of those Minnesota Wild R-Ice cups when we were in Maui last year.
You're not supposed to do that. You're not supposed to bring it back.
The water?
Same thing. It doesn't matter.
It's just the rocks and the stones.
It's all part of the same spiritual enterprise. No. You leave the water alone. You leave the sand alone.
Water.
You leave the shells alone. No, yes, that's there.
The water is the world's water.
Don't take that water.
But it could have been in the Zamboni at the X.
Yeah, that's true.
Where else would that water want to be? Yeah. It could have been hashtag R-Ice.
Yeah, could be.
So, Wild get a point. They have 71. I said on the Cake Show yesterday they probably needed to get a point because Colorado was playing Anaheim. Almost guaranteed 2 points for them. Well, I was
not
wrong.
So fast, my friend.
Hockey's a funny game.
It is a funny game.
Anaheim beat Colorado 2-1. So the Wild are 2 points clear right now of Arizona.
So Colorado laid down.
Colorado did.
Okay.
They lost. So they are tied basically with Dallas in terms of points. They each have 71. The Stars have a game in hand. That's why they are the number one wild card team. The Wild are number two. Then it's Arizona and Colorado.
Blackhawks are done, I think. They've after that big hot stretch, they've faded badly.
Yeah, they have 63 points. They've lost a couple in a row.
Right.
So Wild lose to Nashville. Emotional return of Mikael Granlund. He got a nice ovation. Obviously, that's what we do here. And they take on the Predators tomorrow night.
Not what we're going to do for Jimmy Butler.
Probably not.
When he shows up in late March, I don't think he's going to get an ovation, is he?
Probably not.
Of course, by then he might, because we might be so far out of it and so frustrated and annoyed by giving up 142 points a game. Maybe we will cheer him. I'm not sure.
I don't put anything past this.
No.
But Lindsay Vaughn was at the game last night. She dropped the puck, I believe, first puck, and was interviewed by somebody. And did she put to rest who can claim her? I'll just say, let's let Lindsay speak.
I grew up skiing at Buck Hill. My dad coached nights. And went to law school. I had a great childhood growing up here. You know, I skied every night after school under the lights at Buck, and I brought my best friend from growing up, Hillary Lund, and I've known her since I was probably 6 years old, skiing with her. So I couldn't have asked for a better childhood here, and skiing was really the only thing I was good at. So
gave herself a laugh there. Does that put it all to rest?
Pretty close. I got to say, I think that's about as complete a victory as a Minnesotan could ask for right there. I mean, and I think via Twitter, she had a similar tweet that went down that same road. I tweeted directly to her, invited her to, my sources say she was going to be in town for the next 3 days. And so I basically said, hey, love to have you in studio, talk about the long view on an extremely distinguished Alpine career, so far crickets.
Nothing yet.
I got nothing. I was hoping you might intercede because you've got Vaughn sources, I think. Don't you have some connections?
Not really.
Oh, I thought you did. I thought you had some backdoor, you know, sort of like you know so-and-so and so knows who's no so-and-so.
I think Abbott is the Alpine ski mind.
That was Kosnick, though.
Yeah, but she knows her, I bet.
Well, why isn't he helping then?
He's busy.
Oh, my God.
He's got a lot of brands to worry
about.
Wouldn't
it be great to have her in studio?
Well, yeah, that'd be
tremendous.
Well,
see, you're making it sound like if you don't dream occasionally on these things, you don't get a chance at it. You were dismissive from the start.
No, I was not dismissive the start. No, I wasn't. I just didn't think she was going to be back in town that long. You had better sources.
I heard
than
3 days.
Well, and it sounds like you have the really good sources.
No, not a good enough source, unfortunately.
Maybe Louie can bring her in tomorrow. I think they had dinner at Interlochen.
Is Louie coming in?
I don't know. I think so. I don't know why he wouldn't be here.
I'll see if Louie can get it done.
Here's what's annoying about Louis. He's here last night.
Yeah.
He's gonna be here Thursday.
But
in the interim, he's probably in Maui.
Probably.
Yeah. So I don't know.
He might not be in studio tomorrow.
And he's going to call in about 8 seconds.
Yeah, that's true.
I'll see you tomorrow.
Yeah, well.
I'm not going to Maui till the 15th.
I can't remember. He told us last week. I don't remember what he said.
We can never remember, unfortunately. So anyway, that's what you need to know. So Lindsey Vonn's ours, I think, is the bottom line.
Well, that's pretty definitive.
For now.
That's pretty definitive.
Until we see her at a Bucks game in 2 days, hey, and she's talking about growing up in Wisconsin.
Of one of us, this is a good time to mention this now. If you'll tap dance for 1 second. Speaking of, well, this isn't a one of us, but this is, I guess you could say, validation for us. It's someone who isn't one of us who has adopted us. See if I can get to the text or the email, because it got my attention here very definitely. No, not that one. Not that one. The Good Dr. Dan item I sent to you for forwarding.
Yes.
Might be workable. Here it is. This is emailer Mike. I seem to be continually surprised as to all the celebrities living low in Minneapolis-St. Paul. You guys are much more aware than me on these matters, so maybe you already know this one. 90s French female figure skating star Surya Bonaly lives here. She's one of us. Best part yet is she coaches at Braemar, so JG can line it up easily.
I did.
Did you know Bonaly was local?
I didn't, but we did get that email.
I think she married someone who lived here, I believe. And now, apparently, I mean, she was a star.
Yeah.
She was big time. Figure skating star out of France.
We've seen a lot of these figure skaters like marry hockey players, and every hockey player is from here. So I don't know if she married a hockey player, but like Christy Yamaguchi,
for example.
That's
true. Yeah, you're right.
I think she's one of us sometimes.
Yeah.
Because she married someone from here.
I'm just saying, it would have been nice to try to talk to her during the Winter Olympics. And, but you apparently didn't even know.
I don't know anything.
I didn't say that.
I don't know when Walton's coming.
Yeah, well, that's true, too.
I don't know when Vaughn's coming.
You don't even think Vaughn's really in town. I think you've been given twin.
I think you've been given fake news on how long she's been
That's
here.
Possible.
I mean, because her boyfriend is P.K. Subban. He's a predator.
We're happy for her.
So they're going back to Nashville.
She's her own person.
She is.
She doesn't have to be tethered to him the entire time.
That. I'm not saying she does need
to be. She may have people here she'd like to bond with and see and whatever. The tough part about what she said is she just as capable of going to Colorado?
Of course.
And Wisconsin?
Yes.
And basically saying the same thing. So is it the old, I'm giving the audience what they want to hear, or I really do feel like this is home?
Well, she did say a lot about Buck Hill. That was
nice. She did, yeah. And, I mean, no one else said it for her.
No.
She said it.
That's exactly right.
All right.
Ready to go?
Yeah.
It's hard to win in the NBA. It's even harder to win on the road. And it's even harder to win on the road in the NBA when your defensive intensity is not there. And it hasn't been there in these three games here.
Frustrating. Real frustrating.
Yeah, that's Ryan Saunders last night after the final game of a three-game road trip, where I don't know what a good defensive rating is, but I think I saw Jace Frederick, Pioneer Press, write that on this road trip, Dan, the Timberwolves' defensive rating was something like 123, which I don't think is very good. And they lose yesterday, most recently, after losing to Atlanta, Indiana, now Washington, in a game that it was almost like a celebrity game and like how up and down it was.
It was almost all-star game like.
All-star game. I guess that's the best way to put it.
Yeah. Without every there being that many all-stars.
Everybody was scoring.
Yes.
And it was back and forth until it wasn't.
Both teams shot over 50%.
Yes.
There was no defensive resistance.
And Washington ended up winning the game by 15, so the Wolves fall to 29-34. They're now six and a half games back. Five and a half back, six back of seventh place. There you go.
By the way, for the record, you mentioned the three-game road trip. In the middle of it was the Indiana Pacers, 41-23.
Yeah.
But on either side of that, Atlanta Hawks, 22-42, and the Washington Wizards, 26-37 without John Wall, as you mentioned earlier. So, we're done. It's time to responsibly tank. Not irresponsibly tank, but to responsibly tank and acknowledge that we're not, there's no point in trying to pretend that we're got a shot at making a run here and making a playoff run. Even if Covington had come back 10 games ago, who knows? I guess. But I don't think enough has happened defensively, with or without him, frankly, but especially without him, to think that they're going to go on any kind of incredible, what do we say? It would have to be a 15-4 run down the stretch.
If they go 15-4, does Ryan Saunders get the job?
Well, yeah, I would say that would wrap
forever,
it up,
right?
Pretty much. And that, by the way, would give him 44 victories, which might not be enough, but would probably be considered the minimum. And when Ryan Saunders goes as far as he does, for anybody else, that's nothing. For him, that's a rip. For him to say, basically, no defensive intensity. He says it deadpan. I know, I got to believe he felt angrier about it than that, because some of the defensive intensity is code for effort. I mean, it's just effort. You're just not trying hard enough defensively, or you're not playing smart enough. You're not paying attention to whatever principles that you were attempting to establish. That's the other thing he said, Ryan said after the game, was, you know, we had certain plans to try a couple of different tactics to try to slow them down offensively, but unfortunately, I would have liked to have seen how those tactics might have worked. What implied there is that they didn't try hard enough to make anything work, anything stick. It's your team. God, just it's so never ending.
Nothing's worse than bad defense.
Oh.
Nothing's worse than
and
bad
another
and
a team that's, you know, gonna miss the playoffs for yet another year. I know we got there last year, but big deal.
We even won a game. We won game.
We did?
Three. Right? Did we win game three or four against Houston?
We did?
Yeah, we won a game.
Oh, I don't even remember that.
I think we won one single game.
All right.
If I remember right.
You say so.
We could have won a couple others. I thought we could have stolen game one at the Toyota Center. Am I misremembering that?
Yes, you are.
I don't think I am.
Well,
bootthecafe.com.
It doesn't matter. And now we're not even going to be close to that.
No, sadly, no. So speaking of not being close to anything.
Right.
Ever winning championships, can we do some vicarious celebration through one of our regional teams that we talk about from time to time?
Yeah.
North Dakota State Bison won another FCS football championship this past year, this past January. Got invited to the White House. Today was their day at the White House. So everybody on 740 The Fan knows this. I'm sure they're talking about it up there. Easton Stick, their quarterback, one of their the most recent championship quarterback, got to give a little impromptu speech to President 45. Says, Mr. President, it's an absolute pleasure to be here and a huge honor for our team, community, state, everybody who's been a part of Bison football for a really long time. It goes back to the 1960s, winning championships. It's a huge family. Today, we would like to extend an offering to be part of that family with this jersey, number 45, President Trump. Why do I bring that up? Because he wasn't really expected to give a speech, Easton Stick. President Trump just brought him in, and the QB pulled it off just like that. I give him credit. That's got to be heady stuff. When the president he basically goes, he said something like, who's this? Tom, this guy looks like Tom Brady. Tom, he's going to be a star. Somebody draft him. Tom Brady. Sounds about right, correct?
That's pretty much it, yeah.
So brings up the quarterback, and the quarterback hits it out of the park and presents the president with the 45 Bison jersey.
He'll get ripped for that, too. And it was fast food again, right? Wasn't it Chick-fil-A and Burger King again?
Yep, burgers and chicken sandwiches.
Yeah. And I assume,
and everybody's got an opinion on it.
Yeah, I was going to say, I assume that was his bleep you answer to the people who ripped him when they did that last time during the emergency, during when we were out of money, allegedly.
Probably.
Right?
Yeah, probably. But anyway, so congrats to the Bison going to the White House.
All they do is win.
They do. Jim Delaney.
I'm going to miss him. This is the big lug. The big galoot. God, I'm going to miss Delaney.
You call him Jimmy, don't you?
Well,
whenever you see him.
Hard to argue. He brought the Big Ten into a lot. The Big Ten's got a lot of money.
They do.
They got some issues, but they got a lot of money.
As somebody commenting for the Big Ten Network once said,
yes,
everyone else is playing checkers and Jim Delaney is playing chess on the Big Ten Network, which I still love to this day.
You love that, don't
you?
The
day that Rutgers and Maryland, it was announced they were coming into the Big Ten. He was a commissioner in 1989. That's when he started. Saw Penn
it's
State
been that
come
long.
In. Yeah.
Wow.
30 years, basically. Saw Penn State come in, brought in Nebraska, brought in Rutgers and Maryland, and started, really, the TV revolution. I mean, the Big Ten Network is probably going to be his biggest legacy, is
true.
It not? Given that
no doubt.
It started before anybody else was even thinking about that. And he, more or less, I was reading something today, started it because he was annoyed that he didn't think ESPN was giving them enough,
and he was right.
Enough exposure.
Yeah.
That it was all SEC
bias,
all the time and East Coast.
East and South, yeah.
And so he said, well, screw it. We're going to do our own thing. And that really changed a lot. Everybody's got their own networks now. I don't think any of them are as successful as the Big Ten Network at this point. But he will be stepping down in June of 2020. So this is basically his final year as commissioner of the Big Ten Conference. Your thoughts?
It's going to be emotional. Again, you take the long view, and it's hard to argue with the growth in terms of revenue, and the Big Ten Network is probably going to be his legacy. I'm in the group that never quite bought the notion that you got to expand, that his obsession with expanding into those East Coast markets, you know, getting into the Washington, D.C. area, getting into New York. I understand traditions can change, but I can't say I look at it the long view now and go, wow, having Maryland, having Rutgers, having these extra teams in the Big Ten really have enriched the whole product. I don't buy it. And the idea that every two or three years, you know, we can have our Big Ten, you know, conference tournament in New York or Baltimore or Omaha, you know, which is inevitable. It's going to be in Omaha. I'm not buying that it's really had that much juice. Do you? I just don't think it's had that big of an impact.
Probably not like they wanted, certainly. Although I'll take the Big Ten tournament in Omaha. It's a great spot for it. Look at the College World Series. It's perfect.
Are we going to the Big Ten tournament in Chicago next week?
You want to go?
Probably not.
There's been some discussions. By the way, the Wolves won game 3 last year. Somebody is shaming me.
We're assured. I mean, even if the Gophers lose the last two games, they will still be allowed to play at least once in the Big Ten tournament.
Yes.
Right? You're automatically
you
in.
You don't have to qualify.
Okay.
Yeah, you don't have to qualify.
All right. You were saying?
Jose Berríos is your opening day starter. That's the news from spring training today that we haven't talked about. It was announced
after the
game.
What was it going to be?
I don't know, but they announced it. Okay. Jose Berríos. Right. Johan Santana was at the park today. That was one of Lavell's tweets from spring training.
And he made clear, people know, that Keuchel and what's the other kid's name?
Kimbrel
are not coming to the Twins, in case you were confused on that issue, because so many people needed that clarification.
19 minutes ago, I got a text from Lavelle. Why am I getting ripped now? ? So apparently word has circled
word
down.
Word has circulated. It always has.
There you go.
All right, that's enough. We'll come back with Johnny Athletic. A lot to get to with him. And let's find out if Johnny Athletic will call it the way it needs to be called at this particular point regarding his favorite team, the Minnesota Timberwolves. Stay tuned. Via the Whiting Clinic LASIK and Cataract Hotline. It's your big break, kid. This is your big chance for you. We'll see if you are able to pull this thing off. Where are you, by the way, today?
I am on my way home right now from the Mayo Clinic Square, where we caught up with the Wolves coming off of that triumphant road trip. So I'm just about around the corner from my house, and we're ready to hunker down for the night in another cold, wonderful early spring.
Please tell me that at the media session today, you didn't dare to ask, how does this happen? Why does this happen? How? I mean, if it happens over and over and over, it should cease being a shock and cease being a mystery, especially on the road. So please tell me you pursued other angles.
Yeah, no, I think the one and only angle to pursue today is just what is happening with the defense and why has it not gotten even a smidgen better over these last five or six games, really over the course of the last few weeks. Now, obviously, we know you're missing Robert Covington. That's a big miss. There's no doubt about that. But look, man, I mean, every team is a little banged up right now, and every team is missing a player or two that they'd rather have. And to kind of go out, especially on the road against teams, you know, Indiana's really good, but the other two teams should not be just blowing the doors off of you defensively the way that they did. And that's a concern. And you can't just say that Robert Covington will be the savior and will cure all of what ails this team defensively. I mean, they have to have some sort of personal accountability from the player's standpoint to get better, and they just haven't. And that's been it's been very much a concern over certainly the last three games, but really, you know, over the last couple of years, to be honest with you.
Yeah, that's what we were saying. I mean, in all fairness, in all seriousness, whether this team has had offensive-minded head coaches or defensive-minded head coaches or offensive-minded, you know, interim head coaches, it's been an ongoing issue that goes back forever. And so it kind of is large. I mean, within the realm of, you know, some stretches where it's been a little bit better and, you know, there's been a little bit of an uptick, it's pretty much ongoing. And all that leaves me with a belief that it's time to responsibly tank. I'm not a big tanker, but I also think that we're done. We can pretend that there's a chance to get back in this thing when Covington gets healthy. But as you've reminded us several times, the schedule is about to get tougher very soon. They'd have to go 15, I think, in four, we decided, to get to 44 victories. So we're effectively done with the playoffs. I don't expect them to proclaim that, but I'm demanding that you proclaim it.
Yeah, I do think that they're done. I think that it would take a miracle to go 15-4 down the stretch and get to 44 wins, which is what everyone believes is kind of the basement number that you have to get in for the eighth seed in the Western Conference. And they haven't shown any signs of being able to put together any kind of a run of that sort of significance. Now, certainly, whenever Covington does come back, that will be a help. But they're not playing all 19 games down the stretch at home, unfortunately, Dan. I've checked the schedule and confirmed that. They're going to have to go out on the road and win, and there are a couple of three-game winning or road trips still to come on this the rest of the way. And so to look at their body of work to this point and say that, with any sort of confidence, that all they are is one player away from really putting things together and galvanizing, is it would be fool's gold to say that. Now, it doesn't mean it's completely impossible, but incredibly unlikely, yes. I mean, I think anybody would be shocked if I'm in Denver for the season finale and they're playing to get into the playoffs again this year.
Well, and again, Covington would help, but we don't know what he's going to look like when he comes back.
Right.
We don't know how quickly he's going to be the guy we remember when things are going good. And we can't forget, after that initial surge, my recollection is that we had, even with Covington still playing, a stretch where we kind of came back to the pack. I know Ryan has not coached him yet in a game, I don't think.
That's right.
It wasn't uniformly all great as long as Covington was on the floor. Even defensively, I think we ended up retreating a little bit after a little bit of show of success as well. How does any of this, I think, factor into, from your standpoint, the evaluation of Ryan Saunders for Glenn Taylor?
Yeah, I think it does factor in. I do think that Glenn is not going sort of game to game here and saying, okay, they lost this one, that's a check mark against Ryan. They won this one, that's one for Ryan. I think he's trying to look at the entire body of work and really even some of the more intangible things, as opposed to just the wins and losses, because I do believe that there is a reality that has set in within the upper crust of the Timberwolves organization that the playoffs are out of the question right now, or far out of reach. And so they have to look at other means of how they're evaluating whether Ryan is going to be ready or not. And they, I mean, that's why they do want Robert Covington out there for some sort of extended sample size to see if that does make a difference in how they are putting this together and in how it looks. And so I really do believe that they are going to take this entire 19 final games to evaluate. And to look at, okay, how do the players relate to him? What are they doing? How are they improving? Are they not improving? Who is showing signs of getting better? Who has tabled off or fallen off? And how do you put that into the whole big picture? Then you put that with whomever you are going to bring in as your president of basketball operations or new GM, assuming that Scott Layden is not going to be the guy that holds that position, and you have a conversation with them about what they think. And I think all of that is going to come together to make the decision on whether Ryan is the guy they go forward with or not.
Let me ask you a Jeff Teague question here. He has this contract situation, as I understand it, or as I remember it, is he has an option for next year. Everybody assumes he's going to take the option because he may not get that kind of money in the open market. If he does that, do you know the thresholds, the dates involved in that? If he says, yes, I want that last year of the contract, is there anything stopping the Wolves from still trading him once he does that? Or what are the rules that are in place in that sort of situation?
Yeah, no, he's under contract with the Timberwolves. And so if he were to extend that himself, which everyone believes that he will, they can still trade him at any point this summer or into next season. And
easier so said than is that easier said than
yes,
done on the basis
absolutely.
Of that number? Yeah.
Yeah. No, there's no question about it. Now, what they would have going for them in trying to trade him is he only has 1 year left
right.
at that number. So that is more tradable than, for instance, trying to trade Andrew Wiggins, who has 4 years left on his deal. But the problem is not only does he have a number that's big, and not only has he not played well, but he's been injured this year. And so my guess is, Dan, that their best chance to move him would be sort of sometime deeper into July after teams go out in the draft and into free agency. And if one team has a point guard hole that needs to be plugged, there might be a chance that you could move him. But he's going to be difficult to move as he is right now, just given how he has played and how banged up he's been this year. And going into a year where he's going to be making $19 million. That's a big, big number to have to try and peddle on the open market like that.
I want to take a pause here, and when we come back, I want to start with getting your reaction to a pretty, I thought, a tantalizing observation or comment from NBA Commissioner Adam Silver about NBA players. I want to see where you think he was going with that, what you make of it, if you think too much is being made of it. We'll also talk a little bit of Vikings. We'll maybe even talk a little bit of Gopher basketball as well. Part two with Johnny Athletic when we return.
Bumper to Bumper with Borrero on The Fan.
The Fan.
We're all looking for that special someone who really gets us, who understands all of our moods and quirks, who knows that deep down, we love singing along to late 2000s girl power anthems as much as early 90s slow jams. On Spotify, that's exactly what you get. Playlists that get you because they're made just for you. And the more you listen, the better we get at helping you discover music you'll love. So download the free app today and find your perfect playlist. Listen now for free on Spotify.
John Krasinski from The Athletic is back with us on a Monday evening here on The Fan. I didn't read a lot of the fine print, but I have to admit that the headline intrigued me a little bit. Adam Silver, NBA commissioner, made an appearance at this big-time sports summit, I think in the East Coast somewhere. And apparently he offered a comment or two suggesting that he believes social media is making players unhappy. Did you see that story? Do you know where he was going with that, how much he developed that thought, and what did you make of it?
Yeah, I did see it, and I actually listened to his talk with Bill Simmons at Sloan Sports Conference in Boston. I kind of went back and listened to it. You can see it on YouTube, the Q&A session that he does with Bill Simmons, and I do think that there is something to be said for it. You do walk into locker rooms these days and players are buried in their phones, looking at Instagram, looking at Twitter, looking at all their social media. And we do know that by and large, I mean, you know this as well as anybody, Dan, and I do too, that Twitter and social media and Facebook are inherently, I think, negative places to spend time. I mean, there are trolls out there that are nonstop. That will go after you for any little thing. And it's hard to win those battles. And so the easy thing to do is to tell everyone, oh, ignore it. You know, don't spend any time with that. Who cares? But remember, these are 21 and 22 year old kids who, in the end, when you're that age, you have an insecurity about yourself, no matter if you're an all-star NBA player or if you're some junior in college who's trying to get through his latest journalism course. You're still trying to find your way. And so if you get into these spheres and you spend any time in them, and it can be such a cesspool, you do see how it could kind of permeate your being, and it can poison your outlook on things. And you do, there's not as much chatter in the locker rooms these days. There's not as much connectivity going on. And, you know, the days of guys just sitting around in the locker room after a game and sharing stories about what it was like to play, or what they would do with this, you know, coverage and going out to dinners and stuff like that is kind of going by the wayside. And I do think it's troubling. It's not only troubling, Dan, for young athletes, but it's troubling for parents who are raising young kids in junior high and high school and college. And how do you keep them from getting totally immersed in all of this negativity and being able to rise above it? I think it's absolutely a real thing that's going on in today's professional sports and in life in general.
Yeah, I was
going
to say it's broader than just sports locker rooms or NBA locker rooms, that's for sure. Well, Garzy was telling me again, he's told me this for a while, that in truth, Insta is the place to be, and that part of the reason a lot of kids like Insta more is it is not as automatically negative. And
right,
the question is whether that means in 2 years, 5 years, whatever, Twitter is going to... It's hard for me to envision a world in which Twitter goes away, even if we'd all maybe like it to, for the reasons you just laid out. But I don't know how we get there, and I don't know how you transition from that, you know, from the what is almost an addiction for a lot of people, that even if they know it's inherently draining, they're drawn to it. Most of us are drawn to it and can't necessarily give it up. I don't know what the answer is.
Well, and here's the other thing, though, too, Dan, that right now it's probably true that Instagram is a little more positive. But when Twitter goes away, or when the trolls are not fed on Twitter, they'll go find it in Instagram. You think they're not going to show up on the comment sections of Instagram and try and get a rise out of people that way? I mean, and I think they already are to some degree as well. It's just a little different because it's more of a visual medium than a text medium. But we saw it with Facebook as well. I mean, that has gone negative, and I think people navigated away from Facebook because it was too political or too negative and went to Twitter. And now, you know, once Twitter is out of vogue or out of fashion, they'll go to Instagram. I mean, that's the problem, I think, that I worry about, certainly with my kids today, even, is like, how do I insulate them from that? And how do I protect them from that? And I don't know that there is a way. And I think that, you know, these athletes are inherently self-absorbed, a lot of them. And so they go looking for attention, and sometimes they find it in a positive way. Sometimes they find it in a negative way. But the bottom line is it's so inward. It's so isolating, and it's not, it's designed almost to keep you locked into that phone and keep you from ignoring what's going on around you in the real world. And that's where I think we're running into the most problems here.
This is not a Twitter question, but it is a negativity question. Is LeBron James tarnishing his world-class basketball legacy? Is that a legitimate theme that's starting to develop, or do you think that's an overreaction to what's happening with him and the Lakers? What's going on with him and in Los Angeles?
Yeah, it's certainly been ugly so far with the Lakers, and it was ugly with Miami. It was also in the early going. It was ugly with Cleveland in the early going as well. But the difference with those two situations was that they had the talent to eventually rise above that. And in with the Lakers, they just don't have the talent. And so I do think that LeBron is getting more sort of scrutiny for his play and his role in things, maybe than he's used to getting. But I think also Magic Johnson and Rob Pelinka in the Lakers front office are getting a lot of the criticism as well, because they just haven't put a good enough team around him. And part of that was on LeBron. Look, he understood what he was getting into there, and he signed a four-year deal saying at the time he was going to be patient and it was going to take time for this to put together. But he has become impatient as it has been slow to come together. And so that isn't reflecting well on anybody. But yes, I do think that he has sort of been exposed to a little more of a sharp sword when it comes to public opinion and to the coverage of him than he's used to getting. And some of that is deserved. In the end, I would put more of the onus on the team that's around him than him, because he's still having a phenomenal statistical season. But yeah, the heat is turning up there a little bit, and it's going to be interesting what happens this summer, assuming the Lakers do not make the playoffs.
I think the combine is close to over, finally.
Mercifully.
And, you know, for the Vikings, we all know about what some of the priorities are in the draft. One would hope that in a perfect world they could address offensive line issues. But we're still trying to sort of, I guess, figure out how they navigate things, how they handle things defensively. And I thought there was a good piece yesterday by our guy Ben Gessling, who's with us every Friday. He found an old Zim quote from actually the offseason 2018. And I don't know if this was before we got Cousins or as we were thinking about Cousins or whatever. And the quote was basically, look, I've tried to tell our people we've made a lot of strides defensively, and whatever we do on the other side of it, I don't want it to be we rob Peter to pay Paul. And part of the comeback a year later is, hey, guess what, Zim? There's probably no choice, given that Cousins' number goes up another $6 million, given that that's 15% of the cap, given the contractual, you know, realities on the defensive side of the ball, we're not probably going to be able to keep everybody. And to me, I would say to Zim, if I'm Spielman, coach him up, man. You're not always going to get your way. You're not always going to get to keep every one of those prized defensive assets that you like so much. Something's got to give, and you just have to handle it. You got to do something about it, because most of the priorities, let's face it, financially and otherwise, have been to that defense. What do you think?
Yeah, I agree with it. It was a good piece from Ben, and I think that the salary cap and the collective bargaining agreement in the NFL is designed to bring as much parity as possible to the league. And what parity means is you have to make choices. There's going to be the very, very rare occasion this day and age where you can be elite on both sides of the ball. You know, unless you get lucky with a cheap rookie that just really comes on early in his contract before he signs his next big extension. But when you start to get into your Super Bowl window and your window of contention, which the Vikings are in right now, you're going to have to spread your dollars around. And when you do decide to give out the big checks, whether it is to a Kirk Cousins or whether it's to Everson Griffin or Linval Joseph or Xavier Rhodes, all of that stuff adds up very, very quickly. And then that forces you to say goodbye to other higher priced people on your team at areas of strength. And what's the biggest area of strength for the Vikings right now? Probably defensive secondary, cornerback. And that's where it is going to be interesting to see if they do have to end up trading a Trey Waynes or an Xavier Rhodes, and how Zim would welcome that. Because if they really do want to be balanced, if they want to address their weaknesses, they're going to have to take a little bit away from their strengths. And that might be a hard pill for him to swallow, given the way that he's sort of comported himself as the head coach here of the Vikings. It's clear where his preference lies and where his priorities lie. That's going to maybe kind of buck against their needs going into a critical offseason here.
By the way, which corner do you believe they would be better served attempting to trade?
Well, I think that, you know, I think Xavier Rhodes is the proven top shelf guy. I don't think he had the greatest year last season. But I do think that even though he's paid more than Wayne's right now, I think his ceiling might be a little higher than Trey Wayne's. And so when you're looking at a team that wants to get as many really good pieces as possible for a Super Bowl run, I would probably put more, a little more of my faith in Xavier Rhodes than I would Trey Wayne's. I think they're both really good players, but I think Rhodes is a little bit more proven. And so I'd probably hold on to him before Wayne's if I had to choose between the two.
We're going to let you go on that note. I think it went well for the first time. Your maiden voyage on the Apple. No, not the Apple. What do we call it? The Opal.
The Opal.
This is the Opal. Some people, it's a polarized. I never thought that an app like this, a sound app, would be polarizing. But we still have some people who are put off by it and others who can't get enough of it because it's a lot more consistent than our phones often are. So I don't know. Eventually, we'll try to figure it out and either accept, you know, the change in sound or move on it. But it's amazing. Every time we have somebody on via the Opal, the emails pour in, not about the content of what you're saying, but the content of the audio.
Well, I mean, some people fear change, Dan. I as you know, embrace it. So
hey, do you
whatever
have any
you guys need, I'll do it.
Do you have any Lindsey Vonn contacts?
Not as many as I would like, Dan.
Well,
calm down, Tiger.
I didn't mean that to be a leading question, but I'm trying to get her in studio. She was in town last night, and Garzy thinks she's already gone. I heard she's going to be here a couple of 3 days, but she's not responding to my request thus far.
Let me nose around.
What you can find out. It may be Garzy's fault, by the way, that we can't get her in, because somebody said maybe she's heard about his bit on the Tiger Woods Mistress Update, and that somehow that's filtered to her.
That had nothing to do with her.
I agree, but I'm saying, who knows how, you know, word spreads, and then that. So I'm going to blame you if we can't get.
Well,
that's it.
We'll add it to the list.
Yeah,
I mean, hey, that's the kind of, you reap what you sow.
That's what they're.
I'll say that.
That's what they say.
It always seems like a great idea in the moment, but then years down the road, when you need Lindsey Vonn, where is she?
Cov going to start tomorrow night.
We're still waiting on word on that. Ryan Saunders said today he will be back this week.
Okay,
whether it's tomorrow or Wednesday. I think they have a back-to-back. We'll have to see. But I think sometime in the next 3 to 4 days, he will be back to solve all of their defensive problems.
Well, there's no point in playing him. Don't waste him in the second day of a back-to-back, because we know that's not winnable. I'd wait till we get past all the back-to-back stuff. We will be in touch. Thanks, man.
Thank you.
Johnny Athletic, John Krasinski from The Athletic, helping us out. We've got to get to an ode to a dead guy in which the producer of the show is going to probably have to take the lead, because I'm not going to lie and pretend that this name is huge to me, but I think he is a huge name to a lot of people of Garzy's generation, and I'm hoping will help to guide us through the phenomenon, why this particular individual is a big name, and why his loss is making such huge entertainment news. Stay tuned.
Bumper to Bumper with Barrero on The Fan. It's time for Ode to a Dead Guy.
Well, I think the news on Luke Perry suffering a stroke broke, I want to say, Friday. And we spent a little time on it during Enough Said on Fox 9 Friday night, 9:30. Thanks for watching if you did. Replayed Saturday at 6:30 a.m.
We're going to talk about our fashion on that show at some point, too.
We probably should. That's a good reminder.
I got a phone call about it yesterday.
So since then, I think the news breaking today that Perry has died at the age of 52 years old. I'm assuming complications from said stroke.
He never regained consciousness after the stroke.
I'm not going to pretend that I get the Luke Perry phenomenon, but I'm not going to dismiss it either as being meaningless, because clearly to a lot of people in the population, including you, that show, the show he's kind of, you know, connected to, Beverly Hills 90210, was pretty big, was pretty huge. So tell me a little bit about that program, why it seemed to speak to Or maybe that's not even the right way to put it. Maybe you're just entertained by what it had to offer because speaking of Twitter,
yeah,
it's a fairly big thread there on people reacting to, and I think part of it is when you die at the age of 52, that's going to be news as well.
Well, I would say I'm about a half generation too young to be considered like the P1 for the lingo,
okay.
To be the hardcore dedicated fans,
right?
Because it ran 1990 to 2000, so I was 8 when the show started. But when you're 8, your babysitters are typically 16 and 17, and they're locked in onto the show. And then as you become a preteen and a teenager, and then eventually a young adult, you want to be hip now with it, and wow, right? And I think that show, 90210, while I didn't watch it religiously early because I was 8,
yeah,
you start to watch it just because you want
you're
to be
around
in,
it, and you want to be hip. Yeah,
and it's also when you're in my generation, it's the show that you're not sure you should be watching because, as Lori Fisher said on Friday, there's making out and there's dating and they're doing things that their parents don't want them to do. And so there was always that like mischievous part of it. So, but it was a pop culture phenomenon. I mean, I don't know. I don't have any frame of reference before that on things that just hit the pop culture and hit the young people and then they just take off. But for that decade, and I don't know if it lost a little bit of steam, especially I think Luke Perry left about halfway through that decade before he came back. For that, you know, from maybe the second year of that show on, it was like a total comet. And just completely took over.
How many years was it on?
10.
10, okay.
90 to 2000, basically. And there's been different reboots, like the CW did one.
Right.
The reason we were talking about it on Friday is because Fox just announced they're going to go back to it. It was just...
So it's a little bit of the old forbidden fruit thing.
For people my age.
For your age, that's how it started.
Because all
and
the
then
older
it becomes
people
with
were
it
watching
a while.
It.
Yeah, right.
Because all the teenagers and you know people that are probably in their 40s right now, that's the show that everybody was watching. And they made it. It kind of reminds me for people of my generation of the OC, where it's in California. It's beautiful people. There's all kinds of drama. There's all kinds of plot twists. It's just, it's not like, it's just fun. And the darkness is fun too. It was just a cool show.
And Luke Perry was the star?
Yeah, one of them.
Okay.
Yeah, not like the main.
What was his character like? I mean, how would you describe his part, his contribution to this thing? Hated, loved?
Kind of like the bad boy, I think.
Okay.
Yeah, kind of like the mysterious, what is this guy up to kind of deal. But what I was reminded of over the weekend, the local angle of the show is the main characters moved from Minneapolis to Beverly Hills.
Oh, that's right.
And that was like the whole hook is how do these kids, I think they were twins, Shannon Doherty and whoever else it was, how do they fit in to, because there's no, we're still doing that now. There's no two polar opposites than Minneapolis and Beverly Hills 90210, right? So I think it was just that. Like, everybody loves Hollywood. Everybody loves 90210. Everybody loves California, what all of that represents. I mean, you can argue that the show that I talked about, The O.C. or The Hills or Laguna Beach, all of those shows that my generation started watching in the 2000s were because people were so fascinated with 90210.
What had he been up to lately? I mean, was he kind of out of the scene from a entertainment standpoint? And is he doing other things?
He was on a show called Riverdale on the CW where he was like a father of the main character.
Okay.
And I've never seen Riverdale. I don't know anything about it.
But
when we were talking about Luke Perry in the bullpen before the show, Brandon Tenneby was talking about that that was kind of his next role in Riverdale. I think he was supposed to do a movie with Quentin Tarantino, I read, that was maybe going to start this summer. But as he said, Dylan was going to be with him until he died. Like, that's what he was always going to be known for because he spent the better part of a decade. I mean, he didn't get any bigger than those 90210 stars in the 90s, right? I mean, in terms of television, there were movie stars that were bigger and things like that. But in terms of TV, like the people that came off of that show, like Tori Spelling and later Tiffany Amber Thiessen, there were some pretty big 90s stars that were on that show and none bigger than Luke Perry.
So, so at the end of an era for a lot of people who still, even if that show has not been on for a while, definitely identified with it and enjoyed it. So very sad news in that measure.
It's fair to say that if you're like a 44-year-old woman,
yeah,
Luke Perry's poster is probably in your room at
really?
Some point.
Okay.
I think so. Maybe people can just... I just know all the babysitters and older cousins that I had.
They were all over
when it. I was like 9, yeah. 10, 11. Okay. It was all Luke Perry all the time. It was 90210 all the time. This is also a time when there's not that much on TV, remember?
No, that's true.
I mean, it's not the day now where... I mean, this is...
Yeah.
You know, it's on Fox, which is, you know, one of the networks. And it got big in the summer. It wasn't very good, I think, in reading about it in its first year. Didn't get a lot of good ratings. So they flipped it and said, let's make it a summer show and everything else is on reruns. And then that's what pretty right. much sent it into its stratosphere.
You mentioned it by just happenstance, by accident, we ended up wearing literally the same sport coat Friday night. And we didn't tell Lori Fisher about it because we wanted to see if she noticed, and she didn't until after the show.
Yes, which I wish we had on video.
We also were kind of curious to see whether the average Rube would notice. And I think, well, she kind of let the cat out of the bag because she tweeted out a headline that seemed to indicate
who wore
for
it
people,
better.
Yeah, who wore it better. So did you say you got a phone call from somebody?
Yeah, yesterday during the show, somebody okay. wanted to know about you okay. know how that happened. What that was that on purpose?
No,
was it planned?
Should we,
and they wanted to know who's to blame for it.
Me, I mean, to the extent that you'd already bought yours several weeks ago,
I've worn it a few times,
and I hadn't noticed, or I hadn't noticed closely. Or I think part of it is a belief that, well, even if it's similar, there's what are the odds that we're going to end up with the same sport coat? And in this case, I did, and from the very same.
Same store
yeah. as well.
Nordstrom
yeah, it should have been. Yeah, it should have been part of the.
Yeah, it's a really off. Nice jacket.
Yeah,
I really
like
the jacket.
Yeah.
It struck me.
So is the feeling that we should have the same jacket on every week, or is that a little much?
I think that's a little much, but I like that there were a lot of people that I don't think were tipped off to it that were tweeting me on Friday,
yeah.
wondering because I said that you will see something you've never seen before.
Right.
Enough said, and. People noticed, I think, fairly quickly that we were wearing the same very sharp jacket from Nordstrom.
Or they didn't notice because they weren't watching, and that's another story.
Well, I think people were watching.
Yeah, I hope so. Hope you're
I
right
think some
about
people
that.
Were watching, but anyway.
In any case, there's your ode. Well, it's interesting because we got the show wrap yet to go, and I want to leave a little bit more time to discuss it because we had Marty Gellner on at 3:55, and that was fun. But what made it, I think, doubly fun was the other individual who, for brief stretches, hijacked said interview as well and was on this program for the first time in, I got to say, probably 10 years, maybe even longer. I'm not exactly sure. So we'll review a couple of the highlights from that rather you can't make it up, not exactly scripted moment. And we'll also remind you what else you missed on a very controversial and, yes, I dare I say it, occasionally snarky program.
Hey, don't hit that yet. We got to tell people what's coming up tonight.
Oh, you got Fox 9 News
Fox
headlines?
Fox 9 News at 9.
My
yeah,
apologies.
Minnesota lawmakers reach last-minute deal to prop up state's problematic vehicle registration program. We've heard nightmarish stories about what's going on with that. Apparently, they've got something going for us there. And also, a sex offender is found on a St. Paul school bus during a field trip while kids were on board. That's never good. Never good.
Not highly.
Go on in St. Paul.
Not generally recommended.
This is Dan Barrero on The Fan. It's the Bumper to Bumper Show Wrap.
So the plan yesterday on Sermons was to chat with Marnie Gellner doing play-by-play Twins spring training games. By the time she got the message from me, she was already preparing for her game yesterday. And she texted me, and I said, well, all right, well, let's maybe try to do something today. And sure enough, after she had her game again that she did on Fox Sports North, I guess it was simulcast TV and radio again, with... your guy, Dick Bramer, taking a couple of days off. We chatted with her about 3:55. But we were not, I don't think, more than 5 minutes into the discussion, into the conversation, when she handed the phone over to the guy she was sharing the booth with again, a former Twin by the name of Dan Gladden. Well, by the time Gladden and I, in fact, there were, I think, two occasions were at least, maybe three, when Gladden grabbed the phone as well. So it ended up being a combo platter interview, in which eventually we spent a lot of time talking with Marnie Gellner about her play-by-play duties, but also a stream of consciousness with Gladden, largely because Friday, the first time they worked together, Twitter exploded with the notion that there was bad blood between them and Gladden was being difficult to deal with and Marnie was getting frustrated. And at the time, I assumed it was probably more feigned exasperation on the part of Marnie, that they were just needling each other, because that's certainly Gladden's game and it can be Marnie's game, and that people were being a little too protective of Marnie as she tried this new, relative for her, new endeavor. They both confirmed it. They both said that's exactly what it was, and offered up some pithy responses. Gladden and I, in the middle of it, went down memory lane a little bit about some of our own difficulties back in the day, and then he started talking about reporters sunning themselves and then going down and talk to Tom Kelly about the game afterwards in spring training as well. So it was fun. It was different. And eventually we did get a chance to, you know, Marnie said what I expected her to say, that when she finished the games with Gladden, and I don't remember the name of the producer that she was working with.
Kyle Hammer was the engineer.
Kyle was the engineer.
Yeah, great guy.
And she basically said she thanked him mainly because she got what she'd hoped for, which was they treated her as another broadcaster, as a fellow broadcaster, as an associate, not that they had to handle her with kid gloves because she's a woman or whatever, which is kind of classic Marnie. I mean, and that's why I thought some of the stuff Friday was a little patronizing, too, that people were trying too hard to be protective of her when I'm not sure she needed it. But it was fun catching up, her telling us how she would want no part of that life, 162 games. That it was fun to do, but that she didn't necessarily think it was for her. She talked about her home run call. She talked about how baseball, it's a different form to broadcast a game in as opposed to basketball, for all the obvious reasons. Silence can be used a lot more. You can play with it in that way a lot more. And frankly, turn it into kind of a needling session from time to time, which clearly was the case with her and Gladden Friday. And maybe a little bit today as well. And Gladden also said, call me anytime, even though technically I don't think he's supposed to be on with us. So I think we're going to try to get him in trouble on that. And from time. Now, do we do it like, do we just cold call him every once in a while? Or do we actually set it up ahead of time?
I think what we do is, you know, we go to a couple of day games. We talk to him at the cage at like 10:45.
Yeah, right.
And then go, hey, when you're done calling the game, why don't you call in on your way home?
And then great we give
them the hotline. So then it's like 4:30.
That's a great idea.
4:45. Yeah, I think
I like that. That's
why don't you give us a call this afternoon?
That's outstanding.
And then he just calls in on his way home, wherever he's going.
Yeah, he's a character, man.
He's a beauty.
After that rough start we had, I had a great relationship with him. I think he's good on the air. I think I like that he's off, that he sort of puts people, I'd say puts people off, but that it's quirky. And there's some tension sometimes. That's the way he operated on a baseball team, too. It's part of why, if you go back to 87, that's part of the reason McPhail wanted him here, was the idea of a guy who's going to stir the pot a little bit and maybe make people a little bit uncomfortable. Speaking of uncomfortable, we started the program suggesting that it's time for the Timberwolves to tank responsibly. And when we said responsibly, we meant don't tank by having somebody like Mark Madsen take 5 to 7 to 8 3-point shots to make sure that you lose a game, or to make it more difficult to win a game. Take more responsibly. Just, you know, selective use of, you don't have to do anything as obvious as having somebody who never takes any 3-point shots taking a bunch of 3-point shots. You very snarkily said, well, the best way to tank is to play Wiggins more minutes, not less.
It's a perfect plan.
Which might be true as well. Because the Wolves are done. They're not going anywhere at this point, and they know it. And I know Ryan Saunders is probably still feeling he's auditioning. So he wants to try to be competitive. And with Covington allegedly close to coming back, maybe they will be. But who's kidding whom? This team is not in a playoff position anymore. And we also suggested stop acting like it's the most mysterious thing in the world when we don't guard anybody. And when we go on the road and play badly, defensively especially, against a team that we're supposed to beat. If you do it over and over again, it's not a mystery. It's not that surprising. It's not like you go, well, that's out of character. Wolves to go on the road and to play down to the opposition. I never saw that before. We've been doing that for generations. So, in one form or another. So we had some fun with that as well. We left the toy department to get into the latest Omar controversy. In fact, I think I did see another proclamation from the Dems ripping one of her recent comments in a speech. We got into that, and also the poster that was at, I think it was in West Virginia, at some display area. I don't know who, if anybody has taken responsibility for the poster itself, but we got into that subject as well. I think those are the main things, right?
I think it was a very productive
Johnny
program.
Athletic, I think, was productive as always. A little bit of, well, a decent amount of the Wolves, a decent amount. Maybe we get back to it tomorrow about what the commissioner had to say about Twitter making, Heath believes, NBA players not very happy. And it is a broader subject. You're not breaking any new ground there, but it was interesting to hear a commissioner go down that particular road. We expect Louie on tomorrow's program as well. And for the record, the Marnie Gladden conversation is on the Barrero Conversations podcast. If you missed it, I do recommend it. I thought it was very unusual and entertaining as well. Fan of Demand is what I believe will follow us tonight. That's the plan. And then it's the incomparable Dan Patrick, still doing the Dan Patrick things that he does with the Danettes. Does he come here for the Final Four?
They are going to be here.
Are we going to have him on?
I don't know. We didn't get him for the Super Bowl.
That's
which
right.
Which annoyed me.
That was annoying. Well, that was your fault.
I tried.
No, you're a tough guy on that. We'll talk tomorrow beginning at 3.
To listen back to a podcast of today's show, visit the Dan Barrero channel on the iHeartRadio app or go to KFAN.com.